This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
You know, I played lots of board games where they're like, oh my god, you're using that strategy? What a noob strategy. And you're like, whatever, man, that's how I make my trains and ticket to ride, and I fucking ranched you. Well, whatever, that's a shitty strategy. Like, oh, you just build trains. Yeah, it's called Ticket to Ride.
You build trains.
I got tickets and then I rode them all over your face.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for mises they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's true.
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 225 of the A-Team Podcast. This is KYT, haven't been here in a while. I'm joined, as always, by my three best friends in the MTG community. Jeez. Mr. Scotty Mac.
What's up?
How's it going, Dad?
It's great! It's fantastic! I'm glad you're back!
It's good to be back. We got Jeremy Schofield.
Hello, 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 hello.
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 And we can't not have him. Mr. J motherfucking Boosh.
We can't not have him.
That's right, you can't not have me.
What's up, Jay?
Not much. What's happening, Cambodia?
It's good to be back with people that speak English. As I was
racist.
Able to,
it's like actual
Cambodia.
Racist.
I was in Cambodia for a bit. Spent some time with my girlfriend's family and got to feel what it's like to be like a non-Asian dating an Asian. Everyone's speaking Cambodian. I don't speak that shit, so it was really, really, really awkward for me.
Wow, that's awesome.
So I just sat there most of the time. And Scott, who else do we have here?
Well, I mean, we absolutely have the most prominent figure in the MTG commentary game, the premier expert on the subject. You know him for his shining face and his love of all things goblin-related. You see him each and every week, except for the two weekends that he contractually gets off or some shit for, you know, whatever union contract he signed with the big magic machine of Star City Games. We have with us the editor-in-chief of the website, Premium Content Coordinator, all content coordinator, Mr. Cedric A. Phillips. Cedric, how you doing, buddy?
That is the longest, most unnecessary intro I've ever heard in my entire life.
I mean, if you're going to go, you better go big, right?
Go big or go home.
That was just lengthy and just over the top.
Well, should it have just been like, oh yeah, and Cedric.
Yeah, we got this Cedric guy.
There you go. That's fine. I'm perfectly fine with that. I am well. I've just gotten back from Providence, Rhode Island, a wonderful city, covering a Magic tournament. I flew home this morning. I drove home as fast as I can, had some cottage cheese and pineapples, and now I'm here with the A-Team.
Fantastic.
Is Rhode Island part of, like, New England?
Yes.
And where does New England start and end? Does it start in Rhode Island?
London.
It's not London. I promise it's not that. I'm not sure, actually. I actually don't know a lot about Rhode Island outside of the fact that I think it's pretty small.
Okay.
And that Providence, I guess, has a positive relationship with Boston. That's the worst Boston accent of all time. I'm really sorry.
We had some bad ones on the show, by the way.
Because I was wearing Cleveland Cavaliers gear, and they're playing the Boston Celtics this week in the playoffs. Yeah. And so I was getting some dirty looks and some conversation from the Boston Celtics faithful that are in Providence. But it was actually pretty good because... Yeah, I don't know if that's a Boston accent either. I'm not sure what.
No, it's pretty bad too. Don't worry.
But they all acknowledge the fact that they can't win. So I guess they're realistic sports fans, which is a welcome change.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in very many towns. That's good.
No,
that's good. So you guys had a hell of a weekend up there. I mean, you were telling us before the show started that it was one of your better weekends that you've had on the road with SCG Live.
Well, this is like one of the most fun shows that I've done since I've been doing this for almost 3 years. I don't know if it's the most fun because I'd have to actually think about that, but it certainly stands out and one that I'm going to remember a lot. I like Providence a lot as a city. It's just got like a real small town feel, and sometimes I'm not the biggest fan of going to like really big cities and doing shows. So Providence is just kind of small and nice, and they have a really nice convention center. I just like going there. But Patrick and I just had like a lot of fun. We did my top 8 cards during the first day of the broadcast, which is this really big thing that's kind of flying around social media on Magic right now. And we got to watch Oliver Tomiko win the tournament, the 14-year-old master.
Seriously? Yeah.
So that was insane. Just better than 90% of Magic players already, and he's 14. It's just that was just incredible. And then a gentleman by the name of Dan Libby, who in between rounds on Sunday came up to me while we were taking a short break from coverage. And he was like, hey, I have this commander deck for you that I want you to have. And I was really taken aback by this because he used the word have and not like look at or analyze or use to play me in a match with. He says, I want you to have this. And I'm like, all right. So like I opened it away from me because I thought it was a trap. I definitely very like what's the word I want to use, like very noticeably turned the box away from me when I opened it in case like I don't know there was a bomb or like silly string or something to not get gotten in case someone put him up to this, but that was not the case. There was just like there was just a red commander deck in there with a lot of goblins, unsurprisingly, and also some cards of value, which I didn't expect. As I was leafing through it, there was like a Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker, a Wasteland, a Chrome Mox, a Goblin Guide, a Soul Ring, which I think is worth some amount of money, and like all these cards. And I was just like, are you sure you want me to have this? Because like, you're pretty young, and I'm not trying to be mean with the gesture of like, hey, or keep this, but it's like, dude, are you sure you just want to give this to me? Because like, if you do that, you don't ever get it back. And he's like, no, I made it for you. I want you to have it and play me in a match with it when you have time. And I was like, all right, this is like, you know, the nicest thing anyone's ever done for me. So Wow. It was, there was that experience. It's just, there's just a lot of really cool things that happened. I ate some good food while I was there. Got to see some people I haven't seen for a while. It was just a really good weekend.
Wow. So who was the commander of said commander deck?
Heartless Hidetsugu.
That doesn't sound like it aims to fuck around very much.
No, it does not. It is not a goblin, but it is an angry red creature who I used to cast back in the day in Kamigawa Limited, which was, a decade ago.
Yep.
So that's embarrassing.
Holy shit.
Yep. I was playing that when I was 19, so that's terrifying.
Yeah. I heard you were bagging all over Patrick now to, you know, who is the consummate spike to now build a commander deck so that you can play together.
That's correct. I am now going to bother him repeatedly until he comes up with his own commander deck so we can battle, and we'll see what he can put together. He said that commander will be Zozu the Punisher, which is very indicative of what he will be trying to do to me.
That's awesome. Well, you guys should absolutely get that laid down in a versus video, because that would be hilarious.
I agree with you. And if Patrick ever gets off his ass and builds the deck, I'm ready. I have my deck. I'm ready to play.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. You mentioned Oliver taking down the event with his Abzan Reanimator deck. I was fortunate enough, I'd been watching coverage for most of the day, and I was pretty interested in what the boss was doing, obviously, with, you know, GP Toronto looming around the corner and Abzan Aggr sort of being on my absurdly short list of decks to play. And, you know, he was just absolutely ripping everybody up. So I was fortunate enough to be able to watch he and Oliver collide in the quarters. And boy, oh boy, was there some good magic played in that round.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to watch. I think the match was pretty bad for Boswell. I think he probably knows that. Mm-hmm. He's been playing the deck for a while. But there was that really interesting decision with Thoughtseize in game three about what card he was supposed to take between Move of Erebos, Farika, and Murderous Cut. That's obviously when Magic is at its most fun, because it's obviously a very difficult decision with Thoughtseize. It takes you down three completely different decision trees, and it's very hard to say which one is even correct. And I know that Boswell, he took Farika, and it's like, I can certainly understand why you did that. I know he ended up losing the match because he just couldn't close the game out.
Yeah.
After some, what, it's hard to say if those Ajani activations were unlucky or not, but you know, after some poor Johnny activations and just coming up, you know, I think it was a one attack short, ends up losing the match, you know, to the Whip of Erebos and to some other things that he left in the hand. And yeah, that's just how it goes sometimes. But it was a really, really good match to watch.
Yeah, I think that you guys really picked it out. I mean, as you're apt to do, of course, when Oliver just snap activated that Whip of Erebos, no look pass, just slams the Farika right onto the table. And, you know, you guys made the point to say, you know, he didn't, like most people, they activate Whip of Erebos, they go to look for what they're looking for, you know, they put it into play. You know, this 14-year-old had all of the stylings of somebody that knew exactly what they were doing.
Now, this is not his first rodeo.
Yeah.
And it will not be his last rodeo. We're gonna, assuming that he wants to play Magic for a long time, then we will be seeing him for a long time.
Yeah, it was really something else. So, and he did a really good job. I mean, he kept his composure, and you know, you could see when he was sweating a little bit. And but, I mean, you know, nobody's the poker face, right? So it's good. Yeah, it was really entertaining to watch, and it was nice, you know, because it's kids like that you want to root for them. You know, when they demonstrate that level of competency, and it's kind of like you always want the kid to win. You know, it's so good for us. You know, look, there's hope for the new generation.
Yeah, I just like that for this particular tournament. You know, sometimes when a young kid makes top eight, it's like, oh, that's totally adorable. He probably has, like, no idea what he's doing with his burn deck. Yeah. I hope he keeps winning, because, like, that's cool, and I know he'll be super happy, and it'll be a huge moment for that young kid. But for this, it's like, oh my god, none of you guys can beat him because he's actually way better than all of you.
Yeah. Do you really have to, like, take shots at Sullivan when he's not even here? Like, he's like, oh, he's doing a great job making the top eight with his burn deck. Like, oh.
I always have to take shots at Patrick. It's my job. Also, he takes way more shots at me.
So many more.
We don't need to get into that.
I'm basically getting my ass kicked out there for your entertainment, so I'm not going to apologize for any of this.
Yeah, it is entertaining for what it's
worth. Oh my, yes it is.
But yeah, so it was really nice, and watching Oliver obviously playing a deck that no one else is playing, you know, obviously speaks really highly as well towards, you know, not only his experience obviously with the archetype, but also his capacity to figure out what the right deck is for the weekend. So, you know, he had his deck tuned fairly well. And obviously, he was very prepared for the mono red matchup, which is, as we know, is sort of like that check and balance, you know, for the format that exists right now. But you know, being a Seadrano carried a Courser deck, you know, you combine that with Whip of Erebos and you know some really sweet stuff out of the sideboard, like full Book of Fleece main lines and that sort of stuff. You know, he was really set up and ready to go. So yeah, he did really well.
As I said, I mean, as long as this guy wants to play Magic, he gets to. I mean, as long as he wants to play Magic, we're going to continue seeing him play Magic, because he's just He's really good. He's really good at a young age, and I mean, I hope he sticks with it because I would love to watch his career unfold while I'm doing this for a while.
Yeah. So when I go through sort of the top decks that were there, we saw a lot of Obzon. We saw, you know, both the control and the aggro varieties, more so the control, clearly. You know, some Jeskai littered around, some Reanimator. But what we didn't really see, you know, there was only sort of two copies, I guess, in the top 25, was Esper Dragons, which is a deck very clearly that Alexander Hain and PV did some serious damage with overseas there in Krakow this weekend. So, I mean, what is your thought on Esper Dragons as a deck? Did you guys get to see it under the camera very much? You know, what are your thoughts about it in general?
We saw it like once or twice, not like a ton or anything. I think we had like one main feature match with it, maybe two, and then like a backup match that we cut over to with it. But nothing, I mean, no one like really, none of the name players were playing it this weekend or at the tournament. Obviously the deck is good because it just destroyed that Grand Prix and some really big name players, including Hain, who won the tournament, were playing it. So, I mean, it leads me to believe the deck is really, really good. I know that, you know, Shaheen had been working on that deck for a really, really long time. In his articles, because that's all he writes about. So I know that he's been working on that for a while. And actually, it was funny, during the Pro Tour, he texted me, and he's just like, look at that, Channel Fireball just playing my deck that I've been working on. So he's been really happy about that. But I don't know, I guess I didn't expect it to be this good. I don't know, like, it did well at the Pro Tour. Blue Black did better.
Yeah.
But like, I guess I didn't expect to see it do this well. Slumgar Scorn is like a very, very good card. And Hero's Downfall is one of the best cards in the format. The dragons are obviously really, really good.
Ojutai.
Yeah, Ojutai is a very popular card and very powerful card, apparently. So I guess, I don't know. It's better than I think people think. Like, my expectation for Cleveland to the Open Series this weekend is, a lot of people are going to be playing it because of the Grand Prix results.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a deck that could be very well kept in check by, like, the mono-red thing, and I'm not too sure how much would have happened at Providence. Like, did you guys see a lot of, like, the Atarka red and the mono-red control? Because I think that deck actually really composed some problems for the Esper deck.
At least game one. Red is, yeah, I mean, I think that you're a huge favorite game one.
Yeah.
I mean you have to be. Yeah. And then your sideboard matches are depending on how much stuff they have. Like, if they have a bunch of Drowned Sorrows and more Bile Blights and Purify Murklurker, I mean, they could have a bevy of things to try to beat you. I think overall, the mono red matchup against Esper Dragons has got to be positive.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, I don't know why you're playing mono red then.
And it's interesting you say that, because I think that I read somewhere on the tweets that, like, Hain was 5-0 against it at the Pro Tour. You know, like, all of these guys that were playing the deck basically were XO against Mono Red at the Pro Tour. So I think that a lot of it comes down to, are they aware of what matters in the matchup, you know? Like, the Mono Red and Atarka decks are really, really reliant on getting a lot of mileage out of cards like Dragon Fodder and Hordling Outburst, and allowing them to not only go real wide and put a real pressure on you, but they're also skipping the mana requirements of a lot of their spells. Like, they're double spelling so fast because of Soak the Flames.
Yeah. I mean, it's this weird thing in Magic where, like, I think that this Esper Dragon second blue black control, if you want to group them together, is probably pretty bad against mono red. But how much mono red is being played is question number one, and how good is the player playing mono red is question number two. Because no offense to the Magic community, but rarely do we see good people playing mono red, and oddly enough, when we do, Tom Ross, wink wink, nudge nudge, destroy everyone. But like, mono red has this stigma of just being like a bad cheap deck, which I don't think is true, obviously. And I mean, it did win the Pro Tour in the hands of a really capable player, but I just don't think that that's the kind of deck that people are going to gravitate towards, especially like your name people. Like, I mean, Tom is his own person, and he's like his own case.
Tom's always the exception and never the rule.
Yeah, it's really true. Like, you know, yeah. It's like, oh shit, I'm paired against Tom Ross playing red. I'm dead. You know, it's like, why don't more good people play red then? I don't understand it. And it's been this way for like a decade.
If Tom Ross was paying control, I'd really be
I think I'd even be more scared there. Like, at least you know what you're getting when he's playing aggro. He's just going to smash your face quick. But if he was playing control, I'd have to question what the hell's going on.
That's completely valid.
The red cards are probably super stinky.
Yeah, it's just like, what now? What is this? But, you know, like, Hayne winning the GP, it's a format where control gets counterspell. I don't think that's a very far off place.
How many times has Hayne won a Grand Prix with a deck that contains islands or blue mana requirements as its primary motivation? Because I'm willing to bet that it's more often than not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
This is true.
Like, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
You know, was the GP really affected by the fact that you have a lot of Pro Tour people who are kind of making, like, the second tournament trip out of it? Like, do you get a lot of, like, that inbred metagame kind of making its way over there, and that's why we see so much of the deck? Not to mention we have all the sickos who will always gravitate towards a control deck because it gives them more decision-making. You know, like, that could be a big reason why that tournament was as Esper Dragons...
centric, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because you've got these players who will traditionally gravitate towards the deck that allows them to make the most decisions. They've just had all of these people who have been testing it, and they came from a tournament that had a lot of this deck, versus, you know, something that's stateside that doesn't have these people feeding into it, that has kind of its own unique metagame that follows itself around. Like, well,
there were 1,138 people that played in the event. And of the 9-0 records that were flawless, Robin Dolar was on Dragons, Mueller was on Dragons, and then I don't know what Durham and Reeling were on. I'm sure if I continued to click through here, I could find out. But, I mean, if you look at sort of the 8 ones, you're looking at Raph Levy with Big Red, your PV with Dragons, Hayne with Dragons, Pardee with Wesco's Bant deck, and Camaluzzi, who basically top-8ed with Abzan Control. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a fairly eclectic mix of what's going on. Right.
Yeah. True enough.
Yeah, like red aggro. Like if we look at day two, we look at the day two breakdown. You had 20% of the field is red aggro, which is red, green, and mono red. You've got 17.1% of the field was split each Abzan aggro and Esper Dragons. And then after that, you're like, you know, control devotion, you know, Abzan control devotion, mid range, you know, that sort of stuff. And it just kind of goes pieces. But you know, there's no question that there was still an aggressive slant to the metagame. I mean, if you're looking at, if you want to lump Abzan aggro and red and the mono red together, I mean, that's almost 40% of the format, right? And that's of day two. And Esper Dragons was basically the deck that came out. So is the answer there that the players playing it were just all insane? Or is it more along the lines of the red aggro players got really lucky on day one and beat the average players because the deck is oppressive? Or, like, I don't know. I don't know what the actual answer is, but...
Well, two of the people who made the top 8 with the deck are absolutely insane, so I think that there's a fair way to go with that.
True that.
I was actually going to swing it back to Cedric and just ask, like, I know his tournament that he's at, that he's doing commentary for, is something that's eaten up a lot of his time, but, like, do you still find time to go and review what the other guy is doing for coverage?
Like, review, like, what they're doing for coverage, or review, like, the results of the tournament?
Well, not necessarily the results of the tournament. That's a really easy thing to look at. But, you know, just looking from the coverage side of it, it's kind of awkward to say that, you know, from my perspective, it doesn't seem like you guys have a lot to learn from them.
Well, unless it's a lot of what not to do, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, without going there too much, but there's still got to be a respect of, you know, watching the other team's video.
The Pro Tour was a thing that happened, right?
If your question is, do I get to watch Grand Prix coverage very often?
Yeah,
the answer is no.
Do you make any effort to really watch it?
I do not.
Okay, that's very fair.
If I am off for the weekend,
yeah,
or something, I will probably tune in at some point. I always watch the Pro Tours because I'm just interested in seeing people do well, and you know, obviously, Pro Tours have a lot of mystique and magic around them,
yeah.
New decks, all that jazz. So I tune in for that. But Grand Prix are just something most of the time, honestly, I'm working during them when
yeah.
they're taking place. And then once I get back from doing what I'm doing, a lot of my time spent is reviewing the work that we do and reviewing the work that I do to see how I can improve mistakes that were made, you know, just stuff like that for the, you know, I'm giving feedback to myself. I'm giving feedback to Patrick and Matthias. I'm giving feedback to our directors who are running the cameras and bringing up the images and, you know, if they should have more cuts to the face of the players and if their cuts are good or bad and, you know, mislabeling of deck names, life total changes not happening fast enough, all sorts of different feedback from that aspect of it. So I wish there were two of me so I had time to actually watch the Grand Prix coverage to have an idea of what they're doing, but I just don't have time to do that.
That's cool. So with that in mind, did you get a chance to watch a Pro Tour judge call?
I may have watched some of it, yeah.
You were quite vocal. You were quite vocal on Twitter about this event.
Me?
You. You are no, listen. Ever
are
since
you sure
Cedric, ever since you took on this SCG, you know, boss man gig, you know, you've generally been a lot more reserved about things than, you know, perhaps you might have been in your less gainfully employed you.
Well, I'd like to stay gainfully employed.
and so as a result, it was very refreshing to see how open and candid you were about your thoughts. They were all constructive, of course. Don't get me wrong, but it was like a breath of fresh air to see you coming out and say and just saying it because it's like people are screaming. I can't believe this is happening. And it's really nice to just see you let loose a little in that regard. Do you want to share your mindset on the subject? We talked about what happened. So
I was pretty mad when that was happening. I was really, really, really upset. Like the entire time that it was happening, people are like, they're like describing it like watching a car crash. Okay. Like can't look away.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's incorrect.
It was very similar to that.
It was just really bad, the entire thing. I mean, obviously, I wrote an article about it that a lot of people have read, but
439 comments about it so far.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
A couple comments on it, yeah. A couple shares and likes and stuff, so that's really cool. I'm actually really glad people like it. Like, the numbers don't really matter to me. I was actually very scared to publish the article. Just because, like, I was pretty passionate about it, and like my first versions of the article were not very good because they were very emotionally driven and self-serving, okay. Which is not a great way to be writing. But writing, as a lot of people like to say, is mostly editing and fixing your writing. So it actually went through like four or five versions until I got to the final place that I did get. But I mean to put the entire thing in perspective, it was just really bad, the whole thing. Because like I'm super invested in like the future of Magic.
Yeah.
And not so much the present of Magic. Like obviously I'm working in the present of Magic, but I'm looking much more towards the big picture and things that I want to see happen. I know we have like a long way to get to where I would like things to be, but like I have a vision of what like I want it to be. And this was like, hey, take your vision and like step on it and light it on fire a bunch. It's like, dude, that's not cool. I like my vision. Why are you stepping on it and stuff? So that's why I was like really frustrated because like I compare a lot of things to sports because I watch a lot of sports. I've been watching sports my entire life. And I was just like comparing that situation to like a bunch of things in sports. It's like you watch football, you know, when like they challenge a play. It would be like if you got to hear the conversation between the ref and the coach when, like, the coach finds out that the challenge didn't go his way.
Yeah. And you can just see him saying the F word, but you can't hear it.
Yeah, it's like you hear him, you see him mouthing things, and the camera's like, yeah, that's, like, kind of entertaining. We should probably cut back to the game because this is bad. And it's like, if you just got to hear all of that stuff, it was just piped in, it would just be a disaster. You know, that was like the first thing that I thought. I'm just like, yeah, we don't get, or like when an ump and a manager of a baseball team are just having at it. Could you imagine if you heard that?
Would you blush?
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, and the best is like the announcers are just like, I don't know what he said, but he said enough to get thrown out of this game. I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, that's what happens like every time. And it's like, yeah, we probably shouldn't hear that because if we did, oh my God. It would be so bad. And then we just got to hear everything. And like, you know, it, the way that it went with Chapin and his opponent. Oh my god, I can't remember his name. Oh,
hold on. I got it. Hold on. Oh wait. Damn it.
I wrote it so many times.
Yeah, Michelle Ancona.
Thank you, Ancona. Chapin Ancona. It just, you know how bad that could have been if, like, maybe it's not Chapin who handles himself very well in a lot of situations like that. Like, what if it's someone who has a short fuse and, like, the mics are on?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The person's just like, dude, why'd you have to be a dick and call the judge? It's like, I'm not being a dick. You cheated or whatever. And it's like, I didn't cheat. You cheated. I didn't cheat. And it's like, okay, let's just turn those mics off. That what happened was like the best case scenario, and it was a bad scenario.
Yeah, I couldn't believe was that they would every time it was like they would go to the table and they would turn the mics up so they could hear the discussion that was being had, and it's like it's one thing for it just to kind of be caught randomly, but all of a sudden it became the focal point of the coverage, you know, and it's just I don't. Oh God! And then how they reacted to that? Like, oh, it was humiliating to watch. Like, I'm sitting here watching it, and I'm like, I'm mortified, right? It's like I can't believe this is happening. It's like, it's exactly like you said earlier. It's a train wreck that's happening, and people are dying, and guts are being like sprayed on windows, and people's bodies are hanging out of broken cars, and you just can't stop.
I think the video that I saw was a little different than that one.
Oh,
you didn't see bodies and
no,
stuff
no.
That you saw something else. That's weird.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so weird now because I look at things like a lot differently than I think a lot of other people do in regards to Magic because I'm trying to get it to like a very specific place, which is, you know, kind of where League of Legends is at right now, even though they've been around since only 2009. Magic has been around for 20 years. I don't love drawing comparisons to League of Legends, but it's inevitable that you do so. And it's like, yeah, they have, you know, I don't know, a million people watching their stuff. And, you know, people go to their tournaments just to watch, and you can charge them to do that. And we're like in convention centers with no tablecloths. If you didn't bring a playmat, your cards are going to get fucked up, and that sucks. And it's just like, what are we doing? Like, is anyone striving to just have like the best game in the world, the best card game in the world, and everyone thinks it's the best card game in the world who plays it, and there are like millions of people who play it. Doesn't anyone just want to be like, hey, why don't you turn on this thing where we have like this awesome coverage and like these awesome players who I kind of idolize, and like make it something bigger than it is, and like make it like this grand production? And instead of having $40,000 for first place of the Pro Tour, it's like, hey, $100,000 because Coca-Cola like gave us a bunch of money to give away to you guys. Like, I don't understand like why that's not like what we're shooting for. As you know, like I don't work with WotC, so I don't know if that's what they're shooting for. That's what I'm shooting for. And so when you have a situation like this happen, a lot of people are like, I don't really see the big deal. You know, I thought it was cool that we got to see that on camera. You know, those guys just like argued out and, you know, see the judge make his ruling, and why is this such a big deal? And it's like, well, dude, it's not like about you. It's about like, you know, that kid or, you know, that, you know, 20-year-old something guy who just started playing Magic. And it's like, I'm kind of interested in tournament Magic. He like sees this happening. He's like, what the hell's going on? It's like, oh, it's a judge call. Well, what's that? And it's like, oh, well, when something goes wrong in the game, call judge. And it's like, do I have to like argue like this? It's like, I don't know how to answer that question. It's like, they're really going back and forth. Yeah, I don't really want to go to a tournament if this is what it's like. That's not what it's like. Well, that's what I see fucking in front of me. So what do you mean it's not like that when that's what I see from the biggest tournament that's happening of the year? It's like, trust me, that's not what it's like. I promise. But what is it like? Well, you know, this guy got disqualified. Is that what it's like? No. Yes, kind of. Sort of. This is awkward. This is really awkward. You see why we can't show this? You see why that's bad?
Yeah.
Because, and, you know, everyone's like, oh, it doesn't have that kind of effect on new people. And then I went to States the next day in Seattle, and I played against someone the first round. It was his first big tournament. He drove to play Modern. He loves Modern, and he was playing a Boggles deck, and he kicked my ass. And he was just like, hey, I watch your coverage all the time. I really enjoy it. I wish you guys showed more legacy. Yeah, so do I. And he's just like, I saw that thing on the coverage of the Pro Tour. Does that happen in big tournaments? And I'm just like, oh my god.
Wow.
Oh no.
But like, isn't the answer to that? Isn't the answer yes? It does. People do that all the time.
I mean, stuff like that happens.
But wouldn't you rather him know about that than?
I think that there is.
It doesn't happen.
I don't. It's not that I don't want to pretend it doesn't happen. I think there is an extent that you can show.
I think there's the showing aspect, but I also think that Bueller didn't handle it very well.
I don't want to. It's like I don't want to act like these things don't happen. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, like that. That's kind of the case that like, if anybody else was in the room, I don't think that you get like this whole like argument of like, oh, this is the way it used to be. You know, yeah, I think that you don't have that discussion. I think that discussion does a lot more harm.
I also agree. I'm not particularly fond of Randy's comments during the proceedings. not the biggest fan of those.
As a judge, it was interesting to see the judges stand their ground. But at the same time, you always hear about how you never hear about that kind of stuff because you're supposed to keep investigations private. And there we are in what very much could have been an investigation.
Yeah.
Could have very well been labeled investigation. If someone had gotten DQ'd, that would have been the investigation. That would have been the you're not allowed to talk about this with other people thing. So that was kind of surprising.
I would agree.
Yeah.
It's not that I want to hide that those things happen because judge calls happen.
Absolutely.
And that's fine. Like, I don't ever want to hide that that's the thing that does happen, but it's like the noia, like the conversation that takes place during a judge call and like kind of the back and forth when you're appealing and stuff like that, I don't think is great to show.
Yeah.
To like, especially for the audience of the Pro Tour, which is the way that the Pro Tour is geared. Even though I don't particularly agree with it, is it's trying to get new players invested in playing the game. And I think that showing that sort of thing and kind of showing that, like, this is what happens at the top level of the game. Like, if you want to get out of this situation, you have to be really creative with your words or something like that. Or, you know, explain the situation in a weird way or whatever it's implying or whatever you take away from it. Because, you know, in that situation, they didn't control the narrative very well. Like, I just think that's a net negative.
Yeah,
that was my biggest problem with it. And then when I actually went to a tournament the next day, it's like, yes, this is what everyone's talking about at the tournament. Like, there were multiple groups of people who were just talking about that situation. And it's like, Chapin trying to weasel his way out of it. Unbelievable. And what a jerk that guy is on the other side of the table pointing out that Chapin didn't reveal to Johnny. It's like, well, he didn't. So he's not
it is
being
the rules
a jerk.
Of the game.
Yeah, it's like he's not being a jerk. He didn't do it. Like, a lot of people were coming down like pretty hard on Ancona. I'm like, dude, he didn't do anything. Mm. Also, like, if you're 5-0 in a PT and that happens, put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, kidding? it's totally fine. I'll 100% give you the chance to take back this rule that you broke. No problem.
Yeah. And I don't even think that's like being a jerk or anything. It's just like, oh man, I'm just playing this game out, about to get a draw, which sucks for my tournament. Might be able to win if, like, I don't know, I draw three perfect cards and Chapin, you know, draws all lands or something like that. And it's like, oh, I broke a rule. This is okay. There are rules for that. We're playing at the highest competitive level tournament of the year. I'm going to abide by the rules at that point. That's not even like me being shark me. That's like me playing by the rules me.
Yeah.
So people were coming down really heavily on him, but like all of these different reactions that people are having are happening because of getting to see everything that happened. And like, I am fine if, like, you know, you call over the judge, you explain what happened, judge makes his initial ruling. Chapin's going to appeal, obviously. They know that. Kevin, the judge, knows that. So they're going to go get Ricardo. Ricardo comes over. And then they cut back to the booth and like, hey, Ricardo Testori is going to come over. Here's how this situation, here's what's happening. They're going to appeal. They're going to have a conversation back and forth about what happened or explain it however the hell you want to in a fashion that people at home understand what's going on. We'll interview Ricardo after the fact and let you know what his ruling is and why it was what it was. We'll cite the rule. We'll tell you the times that we can overturn the rule. We'll tell you why in this particular situation it had to be ruled this way. Here's why you can't use the camera in these situations, given, you know, the limitations of we only have, you know, X amount of cameras. And it would be unfair to the other players in the tournament if he used cameras on this match, but not in the other matches. Like, yeah. I think you can explain all of that stuff appropriately. And, you know, still have a and still keep the momentum of your tournament going in a positive direction, because now all of a sudden the tournament is just super negative now.
Yeah.
And like, that's the thing that people remember, and like, not Martin Dang winning or Shouta being awesome, or like Ifro losing twice to make top eight, which sucks because like, you know,
He and Seth Manfield both lose twice back to back to lose top eight. Yeah.
You know, like the stuff that we actually care about when we're watching a pro tour, instead of like, holy shit, I can't believe that ruling happened. And wow, I can't believe that Ancona was such a jerk during that when he wasn't, or like Japan, unbelievable, trying to talk his way out of that when you would do the same fucking thing. Like, that's what I hate about it. And that's what I just like. Once you realize that like you're reaching a lot more people than yourself, and I'm not saying like me, myself, or you, Scott, or you guys I'm talking to, it's just like you have to realize that like that coverage reaches so many different people, yeah, and it has an effect on so many different people. And like, if you want Magic to be huge, which I would hope every Magic player, especially people who play Tournament Magic or people who record a podcast about Tournament Magic, want to have happen.
Oh, is that us?
That's
that
us.
Would be you. If you want those things to happen and it be big and it be legitimate, so that like when your friends who tune in and don't know anything about Magic see like, oh my God, there's this Magic tournament brought to you by Coca-Cola. What the hell's going on? I know who Coca-Cola is. Why the fuck would they sponsor these guys? You know, and then you have like real prize money and like real eyes on the product, and like people know who you are. Your podcast gets more listens as a result. Like, if you want all of those things, which I have a feeling most people do or should want, then like that's why that situation is bad.
It's true.
At least in my opinion. One man's opinion. One man's opinion. That's all.
One man versus the world.
Sometimes it feels like that.
Well, the whole thing is, like you said, it's just messy, you know, and I'm glad that we all have these venues which we can use to communicate through it all. That's very promising. I think that hopefully we've all learned from this as a community. That's a big hope, obviously. And I know that you guys obviously will be holding everyone to a higher standard, and that you will be continuing to do what you guys do and do it real well. So that's real nice to see.
It's just like this weird thing where I feel like I'm bitching a bunch. And I mean, I guess to an extent I am, but it's just like League of Legends started in 2009.
And they're enormous.
It's 2015. It's like 6 years, and they are so big. They're so big. And like, Hearthstone's really big. Like, you can play Hearthstone on your phone.
Yeah.
And I can't play Magic Online on my $2,000 laptop.
That's really
like,
bad.
It'll just crash or whatever. Or desktop, not laptop. It's just like, I can't. I mean, I don't know. It just like doesn't work. It just sucks all the memory out of it and all this stuff. And it's just like, they're so big. And Hearthstone is going to get like really, it's only going to get bigger. It's not going to get smaller. It's only going to get bigger. They're only going to figure out the mistakes that they're making after they make them. And it's like, dude, you know what would be sweet? If I could like play Magic on my phone against KYT right now, that'd be pretty sweet.
That'd be super sweet.
That sounds pretty good.
I bet if you charge people for that, they would pay to do it. That's probably a thing that would happen. And it's like, we've been around for like 20 years. And like, Magic has no sponsors, and the coverage isn't great. You know, the Pro Tour, when I was watching it, there were like, when I was watching on Sunday, I don't know, there was like 17,000 people watching or something like that. And it was like at 3 a.m. Seattle time or 4 a.m. Seattle time. And it's like, I always look at the League of Legends things on Twitch just to see like where they're at, because like I keep track of that stuff. And it's like just random dude streaming just has 40,000 viewers. And it's just like, does that not piss anyone else off? Am I the only one?
No.
Am I seriously the only one who's mad about that?
I mean, as a streamer, I feel your pain. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Just someone who, like, you guys work in Magic to some extent. You know, like, obviously you have the website and you guys have a podcast that you care about and have recorded over 200 episodes of. So, in some regards, you work in Magic. I mean, I'm sure you guys would want more listens.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, the more the better. And it's just, like, I just don't understand. It just, like, drives me crazy. I just don't get it. Like, why aren't there, like, big steps being taken? I don't even want to go back on ESPN, because that's not even the medium we want to be on.
Yeah.
You know, when they were doing that back in the 90s, like, you know, I was having a conversation with Paul Rietzel at Grand Prix Cleveland, and he was just like, you know, with the way that you want matches to go, you want to be like on ESPN and stuff. And it's like, I think it's going to be hard to get back on cable TV. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? We have like the perfect website and Twitch to do these sort of things. Also, who watches TV?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I was like, who even watches TV? I'm like, Paul. I mean, I love Paul to death. Paul's like one of the smartest people I've ever in my entire life. And it's yeah. Like, dude, you just have no idea what you're even talking about right now. He's like, yeah, we need to get back like on ESPN too. I'm like, no, we don't. There's Twitch. That's it. That's the godsend.
Yeah, we like got Poker lucky. Stars is moving in on that right now. Like, yeah. Everybody else is recognizing it.
Daniel Negreanu is streaming poker.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's insane. That's insane.
I didn't realize he was doing that. That sounds sweet. That's insane. I'd watch that.
Yeah, he's streaming poker.
I'd watch that 100 fucking times over.
I bet he's going to make a bunch of money doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've watched literally zero tournaments on Twitch. And I'm a Magic podcaster. It's
but
part of my...
but you would snap watch Daniel Negreanu.
I'll watch it right now. I'm going to go right now and look it up and watch it while we're talking about Magic on this podcast.
So, and you know what the worst part is? So, the Sauce Boss. You guys are Epic Mealtime fans at all?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
I'm familiar with what they
You're
do.
You're familiar with their work? As a Canadian, I have, you know, you got to love
it. Yeah. He's a Molt Realer.
Yeah. Well, so he started to stream video games. He plays a lot of games, you know, just like using Gamecaster through his PS4 or whatever, and he hit some unrealistic number of followers or whatever on his Twitch page in the last month, like literally 50,000, something stupid like that. And I mean, like, it's just playing video games. That's it. It's not doing anything else. Ugh.
Like, I'm on Twitch right now. Magic has 1,510 viewers.
1,000 viewers.
Yeah. League of Legends has 73,000. Grand Theft Auto 5 has 43,000.
Yeah, like, and it's who like, the fuck wants to watch someone play Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I wouldn't want to watch that, but there are people who do.
40,000 of them.
Yeah.
40 times the number of people that want to watch Magic.
Wait.
40 everyone, times.
Everyone just makes like the really poor argument of like video games are more interesting to watch, but it's like
I don't know.
I mean, you can debate how interesting it is to watch Magic versus video games or whatever, but it's like if I tune into like Minecraft, it's just like, dude, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm gonna turn it off. I don't know how a game works. Like,
yeah,
I don't. It's just like if someone who tunes into Magic doesn't know how Magic works, they're gonna go like, oh, okay, a bunch of nerds playing cards. See you later. I'll tune into something else. Like, that's fine. Like, we have a built-in audience because there are millions of people who play. I know this because WotC always cites that the last set that came out is the record-breaking set. Oh my god, everyone bought so much of it. It's like, okay, that's awesome. I'm really happy that Magic is doing really well. Why the hell aren't people watching all this shit that they're buying?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, you don't have to want to play in the Pro Tour. It's like, I don't want to play basketball, but like, I watch basketball. Because I like it.
You know what, though? To be fair, though, like, one thing that I find Magic really lacks is, I don't know what the word is, but it's like a sense of rivalry and a sense of, like, the bad guy. There's no bad guys in Magic. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that, like, bad guys are, like, universally, like, shunned. There's not really a place for them. I don't know, like, I guess, like, Rosewater talking about how he wants, like, what's that guy's name, Tom Long or whatever?
Mike Long.
Mike Long in the Hall of Fame.
Michael Long. Right?
Because, you know, of, like, his achievements or whatever, and then everyone says, like, well, no, he was a cheater, and it's like, I was having a conversation this weekend with some friends, and we were talking about the Chapin thing, and just, like, well, why didn't they go to the tape and stuff, and it was like, well, the tape's irrelevant. They're not arguing that he, you know, drew a card that he shouldn't have drawn. They're arguing that he broke the infraction of, like, drawing a card and, like, not really revealing it to a Johnny, like, kind of thing. It's not that he, you know, it's not whether it's a creature or not. The card is irrelevant. What's relevant is, you know, what happened. And in, like, hockey or football, it's like you get penalties, right? You don't get game losses or match losses. You get, like, oh, you cross-check that guy? That's technically not allowed by the rules, but you get a two-minute penalty. And intent generally doesn't matter. Intent matters for bigger things like suspensions and stuff, but, like, if you accidentally high-stick someone, you still get a penalty, and it's a two-minute penalty, and that's what happens. And there's not really a way to do that in Magic. Like, what do you do? Like, make him be duressed? Like, you know what I mean? there's not really like a way to properly like do that. And then there's also like, because there's none of that, I feel like there's no bad guy that I want to root for. There's no Darth Vader. You know what I mean? Like, cheaters just get banned. And if you break the rules, you just, there's a secret investigation that I never hear about. And, you know, it's like, it's just a game loss. It's not like, there's no power play. There's no comeback. There's no, you know what I mean? And I don't think Magic has an opportunity to do that. I don't know how they would do that. I just feel like that's one of the reasons why, like, I can watch hockey, but I can't watch Magic. Like, not only is, like, coverage terrible and the game terrible for me to watch in just the state that it's in, that it's 2015, like, all the things we're talking about, but also just the fact that, like, I don't care. I don't know who any of these people are, and I don't know why I should care who they are, like, at all. But I know who fucking Mark Messier is. I know who... Ben Roethlisberger is, you know, like, I know who fucking,
what's I'm having name? A tough time following this.
Tim Tebow is, you
know? Name a basketball player, Jay. Name a basketball player.
Michael Jordan. I also don't watch basketball. I think is a ridiculous sport. But you know what I mean? There's nothing that creates my interest in, like, the higher competition. It's like, I'm watching two guys silently brooding over what the play is, and, like, I can get really into it and be like, wow, that was a sick play. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's no, I don't know, there's no Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader. There's no, like, oh, are you cheering for Patrick Chapin? Well, oh, I hate him because of X, Y, Z. It's like the players that are named players are generally universally loved by the masses. I mean, maybe Cedric has, you know, some kind of crazy insight to some secret Patrick Chapin scandal, you know. But at the same time, like, I don't. You know? And so I can't, there's no drama. Like, what's the drama? It's like, oh, there was another pro tour. Who cheated this time? Oh, there was a GP. How many cheaters were there? Which cheater won this time?
Jeremy Design.
Yeah. Like, that's the drama is who cheated this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just not interesting to me. You know?
Well, I would hope that part's not interesting to anyone, because obviously cheating is horrible. I understand what you're saying. And with that, basically, that's just a poor job of marketing and narrative setting, really.
Absolutely it is.
That's the problem, because, like, and, you know, like, obviously, you know, professional sports is bigger than other stuff. Like, you know, you're a hockey guy, and so you, like, know who these people are, and you might know, like, things about them because, like, you follow their careers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I had written this in, like, one of my coverage pieces. I was just like, you don't really know any of the Magic players, you know, who are, like, at the top or anything. Like, you don't know them. Like, you know that they're good at Magic, right? But that's, like, all you know.
And oftentimes you don't even know what they look like. Like, there's so many times where, like, if I was in a room at a GP, like, we've done 225 episodes. I've talked to a lot of these people personally, and I would have no idea who they are. Like, at GP Vancouver, Owen Turtenwald came up to find me at the GP, like, to barnacle me, and I had no idea who he was until he said his name. And he's, like, my favorite player. Right? Because, like, you're right, there's no marketing in this, there's no, I don't know, there's no person to root for. I feel like I'm rooting for Magic. I'm not rooting for Owen. Do you know what I mean?
You actually, I was hoping you'd get there on your own.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But.
No, you didn't. No, you got to where I was hoping you would get to, which is, you'll notice during the WotC coverage that they have, like, these, they have the slides, right? But the slides are, like, about cards.
They're not, like, about players.
Yeah. They're not about players. Because, like, yeah, we designed Stormbreath Dragon to beat Sphinx's Revelation, even though that's not in the format. And,
great work.
You know, they have these slides about cards, but they're not slides about players. And it's like, well, you know, I guess their thought process is that people get attached to cards. And it's like, I don't disagree with you that people do get attached to cards, but people identify with people. And then the people that they identify with sell the cards or make the cards interesting. It's like people identify with Tom Ross, or people identify with Brad Nelson. But at the same time, it's like the problem that you're mentioning is, like, a big deal, because, like, you don't actually know anything about the people that you're watching play other than that you know that they're good at Magic.
Yeah. Or I know that the last thing they did, maybe.
Yeah, like, you know, like, their last result, and like, that's it. Like, and that's the difference with, like, the marketing that's done for Magic is, like, for WotC, who is obviously the leader in all this stuff, it's like, they market things around, like, hey, here's the storyline that's going on with the set, and, like, here are the cards of the set, because obviously it's in their best interest to sell cards.
Of course.
But it is my belief that, like, if you want to make the Pro Tour a relevant thing, it has to be about marketing the players. For example, like, if you know me or follow me on Twitter or whatever, it's like, you know that, like, I like the show New Girl.
Yeah.
I like to drink wine.
You're like Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I like to, like, you know shit about me that has nothing to do with Magic.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of music fucking Patrick Chapin likes.
Yeah, it's like, you might...
I don't know what kind of car he drives.
Yeah, like, you might identify with the things I like, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Cedric likes Taylor Swift and wine? That's kind of weird. I don't know, I like him. I'm going to follow him on Twitter. I hope he does well at this tournament. Instead of, like, you know, I like Stormbreath Dragon or whatever. It's like, you know, who's playing Stormbreath Dragon this tournament? I'm rooting for that guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, everyone's playing Stormbreath Dragon because that card's busted. What are you even talking about, you nerd?
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't, like, you have to identify with the players. And the players who are, like, really good. Like, you think of the people, like, you mentioned Owen Turtenwald. What the hell do you know about Owen Turtenwald?
Nothing. Literally nothing.
Literally nothing!
I know that his name's Owen, he has a cool last name that's kind of funny and uncommon, and that he plays Magic pretty good, but every time I pick him to win something, he goes, like, 080? And great, thanks for that, you fucker. Yeah, that's what I know about Owen.
So, like, you know, that's like, the problem that I have, and obviously there are, like, conflicting interests, because, you know, in this particular thing that we're doing, it's like, we want to sell cards first, most likely, and then it's like, okay, they're here, the people who are playing these cards, but the narrative around these people, or, like, the things about them, is just like, yeah, like, you don't know anything about Reed Duke other than that, like, he's really good at Magic and he's a really nice dude and all the stories that people tell about him. Like, you don't know anything about the players. And, like, I don't think that – I think that it is difficult to get emotionally invested in a Magic tournament, like, when you don't know anything about the players.
See,
at all.
I think a lot of that is where our podcasts have helped to, like, bridge the gap, you know, over the course of the years. I mean, anybody that's been listening to the show for a long time, they know a lot about Owen. They know a lot about Tom. They know a lot about –
They know a lot about – I don't even know a lot about Owen.
Really?
I don't even know what fucking Tom Martell does for work.
Wow.
He works, he works in some place that is makes him lots of money.
I am, like, 90% sure you are the exception and not the rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jay, you really
I don't know a lot about Cedric. He's been on the show, like, 3 times. Like, I don't know it from the show. I know it from Twitter.
But it's like, we also have, like, this medium where we can watch players, we can see their faces, we can see them on SCG, we can see them playing, you know, WotC tournaments and stuff like that. We can see player profiles, we can do all of this kind of stuff, and you tell us that you don't even watch it. So, like, you are, I think, the exception in that sense, that the people that we're talking about are not you.
I feel like I'm not the exception. I feel like I'm Homer Simpson. You know, like, that episode of Simpsons when Homer Simpson meets Mel Gibson and he gets him to change his movie to be stupid because America doesn't care about anything of what you're saying. They care about, like, what, like, the general is. Like, I'm a top 40 guy. I'm a popular guy. Like, I'm a what's popular guy. I'm not a delve deep guy. So, like, while, yes, there's players like you that watch every single weekend shitty tournament and give them your support even though they don't deserve it, and there's, like, the guys that
no offense, yeah, Cedric,
there's the guys that, like, look at their faces and know what Tom Martell does for a job, but there's, I think, the regular, like, people that are just interested in it generally, and I think those people are lacking a whole bunch of stuff. And I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe Magic has 1,000 viewers to 40,000 viewers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But what's going to take that person to turn on the stream? What do you need in order to turn on the stream for yourself?
Well, I just told you a whole bunch. You told me I was wrong.
I didn't tell you were wrong. I just said that what they're doing right now doesn't seem to apply to you. And that if we're talking about making, like, changes to the actual current model, it's very difficult to take your input on what's wrong with the current model when you haven't even given the current model a chance.
Well, no, because, like, how do you know what you like if you've never tried it? Like, how do I know I'm going to like Daredevil? Is it advertising? What kind of me and Cedric just talked about how there's no advertising for the Pro Tour. There's no teams. Like, they talk about, like, Team Channel Fireball. I don't know what that is. I just know that it's 30 guys that happen to work at Channel Fireball. Like, what does that mean, Team Channel Fireball? Is there a behind-the-scenes interview about their practice regimen on the field, showing them kicking field goals? Like, is there... Like what? Like, is there marketing? Is there sponsorship?
There's lots of article type stuff. So like, that's the way that they reach out to people. Yeah, and the little inserts in the cards.
Right. So and that's what I'm saying.
They talk about the Pro Tour.
They've been doing that for 20 years and it's not working. So
what do they need to do?
Get me involved. I've given like a million suggestions.
But like, what's one? What's one?
I can repeat myself.
Give me one.
We could be like that guy that left a comment that he didn't realize KYT wasn't going to be on the Pro Tour, and, you know, we said it, like, 10 times in the fucking shows, in 10 episodes worth of shows, you know, like, we could do that.
See, that's the difficult part, is that we're having a conversation about it, and I'm literally don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, I literally just want one. Like, I just one. Like, where, how do you want them to reach you? Do you want a letter in the mail? Do you want them to singagram it to your front door?
VHS,
there we go. I think they did that once.
Wow.
For me, I don't watch Scott probably has realized this by now that I don't watch that much coverage, and I don't
lazy
know
sack of shit.
I don't know how how to make myself care about it. Like the last one I watched from, there's two I sort of watched from beginning to end. The first one's obviously Hayne winning the Pro Tour. I stayed up until some crazy Eastern hour. It was like from 5 a.m. I had to be up and watch his entire top eight run and winning with the Miracles deck. And obviously I cared because he's one of my closest friends in the game. And then the other one I watched because I was there, which is Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir. So I just sat there with a bunch of friends watching it. But otherwise, like, you know, sometimes it's just like the top eight is just a bunch of guys that I don't give a shit about. And if I don't think that they're necessarily known for their elite play, then I'm even less interested in watching. So how do you make it, like, for me, I can't even come up with like a real reason, a real way for them to make me care about some of these guys on the spot. So,
but I think it's important that the guys are what actually draw you in. Like, I actually made an effort to watch GP Krakow because Alex was doing good at it. And I've hung out with Alex, like, you know, I've had dinner with Alex, like, I wanted to see him succeed. So I made an effort to watch that. As far as like the Pro Tour, like Pro Tour of Dragons of Cartier, I watched that because I wanted to have something important to say on the show. So I made an effort to like watch that more than I would. I probably would have picked up 2 or 3 matches versus like seeing most of the top eight and a lot of, you know, like the constructed that was happening. So that was kind of like my reason, is that I wanted to have more input for the show. But there's a lot of things that they do that just absolutely make it dry and boring. And it would be great that they could do that better. But at the same time, this is a company that doesn't sell the sport. They sell the product. You know, Cedric, this might even be like just stealing from you directly. I remember reading it somewhere, but it's the NBA is the NBA. Spalding just makes the ball. So let somebody else do it better. Because let those guys build the ball and let somebody else come in and do the show, because they care about the show. They don't care about the ball.
That's not stealing from me. But that is a very accurate, I think, way to put it.
Okay.
I think that's very accurate. Because, you know, the NBA is trying, the NBA, when you're watching a professional sports, like, let's say, Jay, you're watching hockey.
Yeah.
They're not trying to sell you on playing hockey.
No, not at all. They're not trying to sell me on buying pucks either.
Yeah, they're trying to sell you on, here are the people who are really good at hockey. Here's why you should watch, because you want to watch this person play hockey.
Yeah, exactly.
They're selling you on the people who are playing the sport, and they might indirectly be selling you on the idea of playing hockey, but it's not like, hey, go to your local hockey place.
And ask them about the new booster skates.
Yeah.
No, buy jerseys and trucks. That's what hockey's all about. Buy jerseys and trucks.
Yeah.
That's advertising. What we're talking about, though, is like the direct advertising for the NHL. And it's like a lot of the commercials are, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and coming
it's
back
hero
from
building.
Being behind, and all this stuff, right?
Yeah, they want to make your hero. They want you to. Yeah, they want idea. You to feel like this guy is like fucking awesome. I hope that my kid grows up to be this guy. I hope that I grow up to be this guy. You know, it's hero building.
People get attached to people. That's what people get emotional investments into people. That's why KYT woke up at God knows what time to watch Hayne do all the pro tour, is because he's someone you're emotionally attached to his performance in this tournament.
Okay, but but you guys get that. Like, that's why you're doing the Players' Championship leaderboard. That's why I would argue to say that's why the Players' Championship fucking exists.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So,
that is absolutely.
So, what advice can you pass on to they that are not doing this as well?
I mean, you have to do more things to put the people as the center of what you're doing so that people can generate emotional attachments to them. And if that means you have to do stuff like, hey, at this Grand Prix, we're having, I don't know, a meet and greet, or we're having a seminar or something that puts people front and center so that people can build emotional attachments with the person that's playing, you know, like after a match happens, or, you know, they've been doing interviews with people, you know, at certain points, you know, Marshall and like the comfy chairs and BDM and the comfy chairs and stuff like that. Like, you just have to do more stuff like that and let people show off their personality. And like, then you get attached to people's personality. It's like,
and I feel a big part of it is like not asking the easy questions like, so like your deck's pretty sweet. Tell me about that. Oh yeah. I made it by picking the cards I like and putting them together. Oh yeah. And then like in that match where you had the sick read and you read it correctly, tell us about that. And it's like, no, tell me about your fucking cat, Mitten.
In some areas, that's correct. Some areas, it's not. Like, I think that, you know, like, during the Pro Tour and stuff, people want to hear about, like, you know, what's going on at the Pro Tour for those guys. But, like, outside the Pro Tour, like, stuff that, like, during the week, it's like, hey, let's do an interview with this person, find out more about this person. Or, like, you know, let's go to that where that person is and see what a day in their life is like so you can get a better idea. Or, like, the thing that you mentioned with, like, you know, I want to get an idea of what, like, testing what these guys is like or something like that. You know, okay, let's go to their friggin' house or whatever these guys are doing. Let's get an inside view of like what's going on in there.
Yeah, you gotta watch out from like a live mic type setup with that, because it's like, and what was the second night of testing like? We got blackout drunk and puked all over ourselves. It's like, oh, okay.
I mean, I obviously agree you have to look out for something like that, but at the same time, like if you know, like let's say that, I don't know, you're just interviewing, I don't care, the Pantheon or something like that. It's like, hey, this is going to be put in front of like the entire Pro Tour audience. So, you know, this is going to do a lot of building of your brand as a player. So, and like building the Pantheon as a team. So like, if you guys want to move that merchandise and you want more people to read your articles, go to your website, hey, don't say something that's fucking stupid.
Or do say it.
And make sure you put your pants on.
If that's the persona that you want to say, then do say that. But like, be aware of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, be aware of that, but obviously at the same time, it's like, you know, the Pro Tour is marketing to who the Pro Tour is marketing to, so you're not going to have, like, something like that. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Like, there's a line.
So in this case, then, so would you say that you're, like, the Open Series caters to a different market than the Pro Tour? Like, would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because here is what I feel we're catering to. I feel that we are catering to people who are more experienced with Magic, with the way that Patrick and I call the broadcast, because like, I don't feel like we're doing any hand holding or anything like that of like, there's no simple explanations. It's like, my assumption is if you're watching the Open Series, you understand how Magic works. You don't have to understand it on the deepest level like Patrick and I do, but you understand how Magic works. You understand how the game is being played, because I believe that coverage should be used as customer retention and not customer acquisition. I believe that the way that WotC does their coverage is they are looking to acquire customers through coverage. But my argument is that's way too difficult to do, because Magic is way too complicated of a game for someone to tune in and turn it on. They're just like, hey, what's going on here? Okay, they're playing cards, and I have no idea. I don't know what's happening. And okay, I'm going to turn this off and go do something else. But if you know how Magic works, and you want to get like, if you want to see like, you know, people playing Magic, that's what I think the goal should be. And obviously, if people know how Magic works, then they have already become a customer for what you're doing. You'd like to retain that customer, and you want that customer to do more things, which is go to more tournaments, buy more packs, all that stuff. So my argument, because, and my argument, this is my argument because Magic is such a complicated game, that you can't acquire someone by them turning on coverage and being like, this is so cool, oh my god. Like, that's just not possible because the game's too complicated.
Oh my god.
But Magic has so many people who already play, and I don't know an exact number, but let's say there's 10 million people that play, or are signed up in the DCI, or whatever. There's 10 million people who play Magic. Like, if you look at the number of people who are watching Magic tournaments, which is like 10,000, or like, you know, on a good weekend or something's happening, it's 20,000, it's like, okay, that percentage of people who are watching Magic versus the people who are perceived to play Magic, the gulf is gigantic.
Yeah.
So obviously you're doing something wrong, and I think that with the Pro Tour, when you're catering towards like, hey, we're trying to take like this very soft approach and we're looking to acquire customers, we're instead like, we're trying, I believe our narrative should be, this is customer retention. This is for people who already know how to play Magic. Boom. Now you're watching awesome people play Magic and talk about Magic. And this is something you already like. Well, we want to make you like it more. We want you to come to tournaments and experience that. We want you to get invested in the people who are playing Magic and all of that stuff. And I think the Pro Tour has this acquisition approach where we have a retention approach. Like, I think that like maybe our coverage is a little harder to follow for people who are new. But they're also, you're also getting to watch people who they've probably heard of as well. So it's like, okay, I want to watch, like, I've heard of Tom Ross. I want to watch him play Magic.
Yeah. No, and you know what? Hearing you say that, it puts it all into a pretty good perspective. Because, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that the retention versus acquisition piece is really important. And it's the way that you guys communicate, the level of information that you're able to convey, because you're choosing to communicate to that group compared to, you know, whatever they're getting from a GP quality coverage. I mean, you have to kind of compare GP quality coverage across, right? Because the GPs are, they're markedly worse. But I mean, at the same time, they don't have the benefit of consistent staff, right? That you guys...
budget, I mean, probably also.
Yeah, those are all things, right? So you guys have really got that market cornered. But I mean, the issue is that you guys give the Pro Tour cover. I mean, if you guys had the Pro Tour budget for coverage, I shudder to think what you guys actually would be able to put together.
Dude, me too. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Because my director of our video department is amazing at what he does. And so is the director of our graphics department. So I think they'd have a blast. You said, like, you know, the GP team, it kind of rotates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Patrick and I are doing 38 shows this year.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah, we're both doing 38 shows. Matthias is doing however many shows he's doing. We don't really have a rotating staff. Like, that's just a decision.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's not, like, this thing where it's like, oh, man, we just have to rotate because we have to rotate. It's like, no, you don't. Like, that's a decision that you make. Like, who's to say that you can't, as you know, whoever, Watsi or whoever runs the show over there, it's just like, look, if you want to commentate our stuff, we need a minimum commitment of this many shows from you. And, you know, everyone likes to, like, make this argument of just, like, it's really hard to get people to do commentary full time. No, it's not. How hard could that possibly be?
It's all. How many people would be knocking down the door who would be good at the job?
Yeah.
For, like, the opportunity to do it.
It's tough to say how many people are knocking down the door with the opportunity to do it. I mean, I think that's a different discussion. But for me, it's just like, I don't think it's tough to find someone to do commentary. Like, if you offer the right amount of money to someone to do something, or like the right or have the right conversation with someone, they'll do it. I mean, I just gave up playing Magic to do commentary full time. You think I don't want to play Magic?
Well, I mean, and to be fair, when you do play Magic, you know, it would be better if you didn't play, you know, burn decks stuff.
Let's not talk about that.
Sure.
Let's not talk about my modern burn deck.
Are you sure?
I'm positive, actually. It was really bad. Leyline Sanctuary's tough. Real tough card. But yeah,
you should try playing with Tron lands. They're pretty good.
For Modern States, very quickly, so get this out of the fucking way. I decided I was going to go like 20 minutes before I went, because I was like working in my apartment and I was actually writing the article and I couldn't focus in my apartment. I was like, I'm just going to go to a coffee shop. And I was like, oh, Modern States is happening. I guess I'll go to that because it's not that far from where I live. I drove over there. I ran to Jerry. I'm like, hey, I don't have a deck. Does anyone have Tron? He's like, no. I'm like, do you have a deck? He's like, I have a burn deck. I'm like, all right, sure. Give it to me. I'll play. And then I went O2 drop because burn is bad and I've not really played with burn very much. Burn's probably not that bad. I'm bad.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm playing Tron, I'm bad because I'm not in practice. So, but yeah, I have this weird mindset with stuff where it's like, you know, you can't find commentators to do this, or like, we can't do that, or like, I'm very like anti the word can't.
Can't, yeah.
Or like, yeah, I'm like super anti that word. Because, you know, I'm just seeing all these things that are happening, and it's like, you're telling me that like in the year of 2015, we can't do this thing that like other people are doing, or like, it can't be done because like, it would be tough. It's like, it would be really tough to find consistent commentators for the Grand Prix. No, it wouldn't. No, it wouldn't. Because if you wanted to have consistent commentators for the Grand Prix, if that was your goal, if that was something that you demanded it would happen, then you would cut out the appropriate budget to have that happen, and you would stress importance on that. It's just like anything else in life. Like, if you want to make it happen, you'll make it happen. It's like Star City Games wanted consistent commentary instead of having to do this rotating staff to improve the quality of it. It's like, that's important to us. Okay, fine. Let's have a discussion about it. Okay, done. And now we have that. And I think it gives us, you know, like, it, I guess, an edge, for lack of a better term, because, like, Patrick and I do it together, so we're able to consistently get better at it. But, like, if that's something that, like, the pro tour wanted to have happen, or, you know, anything, it's like, you can have that happen. It's not like I'm asking a person who's paralyzed to walk.
I think that the budget is different, though. I mean, you guys, until very recently, obviously, have been predominantly located only in the, like, in the continental United States, right? I mean, you've got a couple that you're expanding to this year, but those are based on Grand Prix for the most part. So it's I guess it's a lot easier, and a lot easier on the budget, most specifically, to have people flying only within the United States. You're looking at, you know, you've got people all over. So, I mean, if we're talking about having a European coverage team and a North American coverage team, then that's a different discussion, I understand. But I don't know. It seems like it's potentially a lot more money. I just know what it costs to fly in Canada, and I just want to fucking die.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous here.
It's just all a decision, I think, on what you want, because it's at the same time, you know, like, I don't know what the budget is that Star City has for like what we do.
Yeah.
Obviously, but like, I live in Seattle. Patrick lives in San Diego, and most of our shows are on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's cheap for them to fly us cross country, you know, for, I don't know, 75% of our shows. Like, that's definitely not the case. But it's all about, like, what you want to accomplish. And if you think that having a really good commentary team do the same shows to be able to get reps in together and be able to know the narratives and what happened over the past handful of shows without having to, like, okay, we have a new commentary team this week and we need to bring you guys up to speed on, like, the format and what happened, the previous thing, and, like, here's where the race is at and all these things, like, that obviously there are costs associated with that, and you have to weigh those and decide what's important as a company.
Yeah.
But again, like, that's like just where I kind of come from with that thing of, like, you know, people, you know, we can't have hand cams, or, you know, we can't do this, we can't do that. It's like, I watch a game of football or like a game of hockey, and it's like, I can see someone get hit from 18 different angles, you know? So it's like, I don't want to hear you can't do it. If you don't want to do it,
that's something, or like, else,
if it, yeah, if it doesn't fit into your budget, like, that's one thing. But don't say that, like, you know what, god damn it, we just can't figure out hand cams for the fucking life of us. It is just, the technology is just not there. Because that's just not true.
Yeah. Well, I just hope that eventually it gets to where, you know, truthfully, they just need to hire you guys out. Just have all the coverage done by SCG Live. Just become your own separate company and do it.
I mean, maybe yes, maybe no. Like, it's not my mission to try to, like, run down people who are doing coverage for WotC. Like, that's not what it's about. It's not like my goal isn't like, you know what, I am so tired of Randy and I'm just going to take a shot at him in my article and hopefully they'll fire him and be like, Cedric, you were right all along. Please come work for us. That's not even close to what my goal is for this sort of thing. Like, in a perfect world, the Pro Tour coverage would be great and everyone would enjoy it and people would enjoy what we're doing and we give an alternative and you watch what you want to watch, but you guys are all watching Magic and that's great. That, in a perfect world, that's what I want. Like, it's not about, like, holy shit, these guys are so bad at coverage, I can't take it anymore. That's not even close to the agenda. And it's funny because a lot of people think that is what my agenda is and was with my article, and it's just not.
Yeah.
All I want and all I've ever wanted is at, for some point, if someone says, hey man, what are you doing this weekend? And it's like, I'm going to Magic Tournament. They know what that means and they're like, dude, that's awesome. Good luck. Because right now, that's what happens with League of Legends. That's what happens with StarCraft. And generally, that's actually what happens with video games now, because video games aren't dorky anymore. They're socially acceptable. It's like, dude, I'm going to go play Destiny because that game's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I say, hey, what are you doing this weekend? It's like, I'm going to play Magic Tournament. It's like, or, you know, some people are just like, I'm doing something. I'm not here this weekend, so that's cool. You know, they don't even want to tell their friends what they're doing. It's like, that's all I literally want to have happen, is for people to just be like, hey, I'm going to play a Magic tournament because that's awesome, and if you don't like it, you're fucking stupid.
Yeah.
That's literally it. And I just want it to be a socially acceptable game, and it would be great if we had sponsors and people were winning real money, and you know, you could live off of this instead of having to be the Tom Martell or the Paul Rietzel, where it's like, I'm a lawyer full time, and then I get to play Magic on the side because Magic pays like complete dog shit. That's it. That's literally all I want to have happen.
Yeah. Well, we're getting there, but you're right. The corporate sponsorships need to happen. But I mean, lay, if Innocent Gun Brewery can sponsor my fucking internet stream, then come on. Do the right thing, Pepsi, right?
Gotta be willing to have the conversation.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't work for WotC. I don't know if the conversation's been had, but gotta be willing to have the conversation.
Yeah.
It certainly legitimizes what we're doing. Sponsors legitimize what you're doing, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think that's something just like a lot of people kind of miss out on, is like sponsorship in such a big way legitimizes like what's going on. You know, you turn on like a sporting event and there's a real sponsor who you've heard of, like McDonald's or Coca-Cola or something. It's like, okay, well, those guys wouldn't pay money to be on here if what's happening on the screen isn't like a real thing, you know?
Yeah.
So if you get like a real sponsor for Magic or for like SCG Live or something, it's like, why the hell are they here? This must be a big deal, because Coca-Cola is a real company. They wouldn't pay money to be on here. Let's see what's going on. Yeah. And then that just legitimizes what you're doing. And they'll also give you money.
Money's good. So Grand Prix Toronto's coming up pretty soon.
So I've heard.
Unfortunately, obviously, you're not going to be making it with the response of that nature.
Yeah, it's this whole job thing. It's really...
You guys are running an event that week, eh?
When is GP Toronto? 2 weeks?
It is 2 weeks.
Okay, I'm in Cleveland this week.
Yep.
Oh, and I am. Oh, I'm in Portland the week after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are coming down for this event. It's going to be big. So, Standard is something that you've watched a lot of in the last little bit.
Me?
You have watched a lot of it. How do you feel about Standard as a format overall? Healthy? What decks do you like? What would you be playing? If you had to go to this tournament, what would you be playing and why? Love
Standard
to
is awesome.
Opinion. Okay.
Standard is awesome. Standard is so good. I don't know if it's the best Standard format like ever, because like I'm not playing, so I don't get to experience it firsthand. But getting to watch it, I'm not bored of watching the games. I'm even close.
Yeah.
So... in that regard, I think the Standard's awesome. Just the fact that you can build so many decks so many different ways makes for a really awesome experience for people who are playing, makes an awesome experience for people who are watching. And I think it's just kudos to the people in R&D who do a job I could never do, and they do it extremely well, because this Standard format, it seems like one of the best I've ever seen. As far as what I would be playing... I would be playing one of two decks. I like Avazon Aggro a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think the deck's really good, mostly because it kind of plays the kind of Magic I like, which is creatures that are good early and good late. Figure of Destiny is my favorite Magic card, as most people know. And that card's good on turn one, that card's good on turn four, that card's good on turn seven.
Yeah.
I think you can say the same thing about Fleece Mainline, Rishasha Death Dealer, Warden of the First Tree, Siege Rhino. A lot of the cards in that deck. That's why I like that deck a lot.
So do you like Boswell's version better than Brad's, or you like the Roanoke version?
I'm not sure which one I like better, because I haven't got to actually play games. Like, it's very difficult for me not to just trust Brad in the dark.
Yeah.
Because Brad's really good at Magic, especially Standard Magic.
Yeah.
So it leads me to believe that their version is really good, but also you can't discount Boswell's result either.
True.
Because Boswell is just destroying everyone in that deck every week, and I know he's not winning the tournament, but he's doing everything but that, it seems. But I think that's just more indicative of that style of deck is very good. The other deck that I would play, and I think if I had to play in the Standard tournament tomorrow, I would play Bant Heroic.
Yeah.
So Heroic is kind of like... Heroic has a stigma that I hate Magic so much, which is Tom... When he played that deck in Syracuse, he like thought of it in the car, put it together, played it, made top eight, kept some terrible hands in top eight, lost to Teemer, and then we made fun of him about it afterward when we went to dinner. And we're just like, dude, that matchup's insane for you. Just stop keeping shitty hands, dude. Just beat all your opponents. That top eight, I'm super happy Chris won because I love Chris. That top eight was Tom's to win.
Yeah.
The bracket was perfect for him, and he just kept two bad hands, and he lost. But when we were watching Tom play, like, he wasn't that sharp with the deck, and he also said he didn't like his build of the deck that much. And then he wrote about it the week after. But like, he was making mistakes that were uncharacteristic for him. He didn't rebound a Center Soul. He tried to kill an Icefall Regent with a Jamokha's Command when he didn't have enough mana to do it because he couldn't pay the extra two. Just some stuff that, like, very uncharacteristic of Tom if he's well-tested. And despite this, he made top eight of the tournament. Probably should have won the tournament. And Jamokha's Command, that's the best Jamokha's Command deck by so much it's a joke.
Yeah. Yeah, like, agree.
The first time I watched Tom had a favorite Hoplite and four mana up. He had enough mana to cast two Jamokha's Commands. But his opponent has two Deathless Raptors in play and just attacks him. And Tom's like, all right, Jamokha's Command, target my favorite Hoplite, give it +1/+1, and fight your Deathless Raptor. And I was like, holy shit, that's not a thing that should be able to happen. Because it gets counter, then it gets a heroic counter, and triggering heroic means it doesn't take any damage. So then it gets to kill the Deathless Raptor and block the other one. So nice Death Touch, that doesn't matter. And I was like, okay, I don't know if WotC got that wrong or something, but Jamokha's Command with the heroic mechanic is like, you can't do anything. And it's like the best Jamokha's Command deck, and you get to play Treasure Cruise in however many numbers you want to, because you have eight fetches, and a lot of your cards just don't cost very much mana. Like, you're cycling Defiant Strike, you have more deals that are going to go to the graveyard, all this stuff. And I'm just like, dude, this deck seems super good. My friend, Tommy Ashton, asked me what deck to play in Standard for his Magic Online PTQ last week. I told him to play Ban Heroic and just play whatever Tom wrote about. He went 10-0 through the PTQ and won on Magic Online.
Well, then.
And, like, Tommy's really good, and he plays a lot of Magic, and I've known him for a really long time, but he's just like, yeah, this deck's insane. I just took Tom's article and just did everything he told me to do, and I just crushed everyone. I'm like, okay, that's awesome. Congrats on queuing again. And then we haven't seen it at all.
Yeah.
Pro Tour. Nothing.
I think it's notoriously, it's got a bad reputation of being notoriously inconsistent and generally somewhat difficult to play without practice. Like, it's not a deck that you pick up cold. There are a lot of interactions and there are a lot of hands that you have to keep versus, you know, hands that you should keep or hands that you should ditch, right? Like, there's a lot of that is probably, and I think it's more exacerbated than with that deck than with most of the others in Standard.
I call it Red Stigma. That's what I'm going to call it. That's what I'm going to deem this term. Red
but like
stigma.
On the other end?
No, it's just like I the stigma of like, I'm not going to play mono red because that deck's linear and straightforward and it has no decisions, which just isn't true. I think that's what people think about Heroic too.
Listen, after watching Tom play Bant Heroic, I think whoever says that's a fucking idiot.
I agree.
Like, there is no question. I think the problem is that that's the other side of it. I think there's too many decision lines. I think there's too much that you need to go right either through effective decision making or just general comprehension of the deck in order to find success with it. But that said, I mean, your buddy obviously doesn't just 10-0 a PTQ because the deck's insane. He's obviously a competent player.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy's a really good Magic player who obviously just a lot of people just aren't going to know. But, like, I think there are certain types of decks in Magic that had a stigma of, like, dude, I'm not going to play that deck because of, like, reason A. And most of the time it's like, it's just not very skill intensive. Like, that's what everyone thinks about Red. It's just like, am I going to play Red? Are you kidding? Am I going to play Red the Pro Tour? Red sucks. It's just straightforward, stupid deck. They're Drown Star, I lose. You know, or like, that's what I think people think about Heroic too. It's like, dude, Heroic's not that good. It's just like, Tom is just cutting up people who are bad at Magic, and that's it. Tom plays shitty decks, but he plays them well, so he wins. And it's like, no, actually, his deck's like really good, and Tom's really good. And he's beating people who are like pretty good too. And I think that's, I think that's what happens with Red, and I think Heroic can like White Weenie. Isn't that like what everyone thinks about White Weenie?
Yes. I imagine you have a little bit to say about that.
Yeah, it's just like that's a people's opinion on the deck, and like I'm obviously biased because like I had a lot of success playing White Weenie, but it's just like, why don't you play White Weenie in the tournament? It's like, no. I had a conversation with Ben Friedman
Okay. Okay.
The Richmond Invitational, the season one Invitational. And he had a sheet of paper, and he was sitting down with Christian Calcano, and he was writing down the decks that they won, that him and his team were going to test for the Pro Tour, because it was the next week. And so he had, like, you know, Salty Reanimator, Abzan Reanimator, all these mid-range Siege Rhino decks, and, you know, Blue-Black Control, and Esper Dragons, all this stuff written down. He had Mono Red, and he had a big X next to it. And I'm like, why do you have an X next to Mono Red? And he's like, I'm not going to play that. I just, we got test against it just in case. And I'm like, why wouldn't you play it? And he's like, I'm not gonna go to a pro tour. I'm not gonna go to a pro tour and play red. If I do bad with red, it's like I wasted a pro tour. I'm like, well, what if red's the best deck? He's like, well, I'm just not gonna play red. Like, it's just, it's a waste. It's not really like my kind of deck. And I'm just like, I don't even know what that means. What does that even mean?
No idea.
It's not my kind. It's not my. We're gonna test against it. What if it's the best deck? I don't care. I will figure out something to beat it. What?
So you've got the people that pigeonhole themselves into a play style that they're comfortable with, right? And I mean, you always...
But that's so many people!
Yeah.
Like, so many people have that sentiment about, like, a deck they want to play, and I think Heroic falls underneath the same camp of just like, yeah, that's like a deck. Sure. But, like, I'm not gonna play that. It's just a deck I know exists, and we'll be cognizant of it when we are preparing for the Pro Tour. That's what I think happens. Yeah. Especially with Heroic. I think people look Heroic as just like, what a noob strategy. That's what I think happens to that. And same with like White Weenie and Red. Because like you guys talked about it when we were talking about Esper Dragons, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I want to play a deck with a bunch of decisions. That's what I'm going to do. And like, if you think about the Esper deck from like the previous standard format and like Mono Black Devotion, Mono Blue Devotion. So I played Esper in like the tournaments I got to play in when I wasn't working. It's like the most straightforward deck ever. Play a temple. Play a land. D-Sphere or Heroes Downfall, your guy. Play Verdict or Jace. All right, am I dead? No, am I not? Okay, cast Rev for all my mana. Kill all your shit again. Hope I draw a Rev. Draw a second Rev. You probably concede now. Look at all those decisions.
Yeah.
So many tough decisions. It's like, look at the Dragon's deck now. All right, I will play some lands. Kill all your shit. Counter something if it matters, draw some cards. Like, it's not like, obviously it's not that straightforward, but it's like these control decks that everyone's like, I get all these decisions. Like, I mean, you get some, you get as many as you get with like an aggressive deck or like a mid-range deck.
I think that stigma generally just comes from the, like you said earlier, the caliber of player. You know, like new players, I find a lot of the times like decks like that because they're easier, and so when you're new, you know, obviously you're not just going to jump into the hardest deck in the format. And then so they get this bad stigma, right? Of like, but I think everything has that, you know, every sport, every video game, every board game, you know, I've played lots of board games where they're like, oh my God, you're using that strategy. What a noob strategy. And you're like, whatever, man. That's how I make my trains and Ticket to Ride. And I fucking ranched you. Well, whatever. That's a shitty strategy. Like, oh, you just build trains. Yeah. It's called Ticket to Ride.
You build trains.
I got tickets and then I rode them all over your face. You know? So, yeah. You know, I think, and I mean, like, and that's just in my experience. Like, you know, and I think that happens quite a lot. Like, I have friends that are, you know, good Magic players. I have friends in the Edmonton circuit. I'm friends with Tyler Bloom, like, you know, on the Pro Tour, made silver. Alex Hain, you know, like, and I just don't know if I would ever see those guys play a deck like Mono Red. I'm not, to my knowledge, I don't think I ever have seen them play a deck like that or Bant Hexproof or Bant Heroic. You know, they always play decks that are perceived to have these, what do people always say in the Magic community? Complex decision trees. And I think I absolutely agree with you. I just think that could be one of the motivations, right? It has like a stigma.
I think you're right. I think these things do have a stigma. I think I just find it really frustrating. Like,
yeah,
I had like a feeling, you know, after Tom did well at Syracuse or whatever with that deck, and then the Pro Tour was the next week. You know, some people were just like, "What should I play the Pro Tour?" I'm like, I think Ban Heroic is completely busted. I think his deck is insane because, like, I thought he played like pretty bad over the course of the weekend, like very bad for Tom, like just uncharacteristically bad, and was still just like cutting people up, and you're seeing like insane synergies, and I'm like, well, obviously there's something going on here because like Jamoka's Command in this deck is every time you drew Jamoka's Command and cast it, I'm like, oh yeah, this game's over.
Yeah,
you can keep playing, but like the game's over now.
Yeah, truthfully, Jamoka's Command just seemed like one of those cards where it was just kind of okay, You know, it was like, well, you know, like, I get that it's a good raid on all the abilities, but your board state kind of has to be in this specific area, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you're right. Then he casts it in Bant Heroic, and all of a sudden, you realize that you get that Jeskai Ascendancy moment where you go, oh, wait, maybe they screwed up a little.
Yeah, it's just, it's like, not to the same extent, but it's like Serac and the Abzan aggro deck. That's the best deck for Serac. Like, everyone's trying to figure out, like, do I put it with these dragons and stuff? And, you know, then I've got, like, this ground pounder and these flying creatures and stuff. It's like, no. And, like, it just runs into a siege round. It's like, nah, dude. Like, Serac always has haste when you play Knobs on aggro.
Yeah.
Literally every time.
Yeah.
It's just 5-4 haste, and then your Rhino has haste next turn. They're dead. You know, like, so that's why I was, like, such a big fan of that deck. And every person I talked to was just like, yeah, I don't know. Just probably going to play Abzan Control and just be ready for the mirror then. Probably play like a Wingmate Rock main, hope I draw it in the mirror, and we're good. It's like, all right.
We're good.
I guess that's, I mean, you can do whatever you want. Like, I don't play anymore, but watch a lot of Magic, so.
Yeah, what do
like,
I know?
Like, after Mono Red won the Pro Tour, and I had a particularly poor showing with my Esper deck that I was just, like, frustrated with because mostly of how much money it cost, I was, like, talking to some friends, and they're like, oh, are you going to FNM or whatever? And I was like, yeah, like, I'll probably play Mono Red. And they're like, wow, I didn't realize you were the worst human being on the planet. And I was like, yeah, I totally am, I guess.
How did you miss that?
Like, how could you possibly have missed that? And then...
I thought you knew.
Yeah, like... And that's just how it goes, right? If I were to say like, oh yeah, I'm playing Esper Dragons, they're like, oh yeah, the Pro Tour one, and like, well actually, I was playing it when it was just called Esper and have the exact same cards in it. And I mean, yeah, it's doing well the Pro Tour, like, I don't know, I don't watch the Pro Tour, so you tell me. But no, you're like, I'm playing Moderate. Oh really? Ugh, what a noob. And then, like, it's kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier with the Chapin thing and the mics being plugged in, where it's like, when new players are hearing that, that's not something that they want to hear, and that's not something that's good for the game. And to make a parallel with sports, like, I don't know about football and basketball, but I very rarely hear that in hockey. Like, oh, Sidney Crosby's wearing a CCM helmet. What a noob. Everybody knows that Jofa is the helmet of champions. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's not something that's happening. So,
yeah, I mean, perception is reality, as they like to say. So when people say stuff like that, or, you know, I do love that, like, if you're playing Mono Red, it's like you immediately get the sigh.
Yeah, just, immediately.
As soon as you
no
go
what.
Mountain, Red 1 drop, yeah. You will always watch your opponent go, oh.
You're that guy, huh? You're that guy with the no money and the no brain.
It's yeah, like, great. You're just great. And then, like... And then you'll hear that too, like, oh, hey man, how'd your match go? Yeah, it was like absolute shit. I mauled a like fucking sixer. I mauled against Mono Red, and he just fucking nut drew me with a one drop and spells. Oh.
Yeah, it's yeah, not just like.
It's too bad he didn't play any of his cards.
It's never, I lost to Mono Red, and my opponent was good, and my deck wasn't really prepared to beat it because I was hoping people wouldn't play it. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, because I didn't think it was a real deck, and I like discounted it, and, you know, yeah. Like, ugh. Casual.
I didn't draw the perfect sequence of lands in the two sideboard cards that I have for that matchup. I lost. Yeah, I lost.
Pretty much. If you lose to Abzan, it's like, oh yeah, I lost a really close match to Abzan. He played Siege Rhino on turn 4, 5, and 6, and I just couldn't keep up.
Yeah, but you know, an Abzan has good cards in it, so, you know.
Yeah.
You know, good match, good bout.
Yeah. No, he played Thoughtseize and then Pack Rat, and then I killed it, and he played another one. It was really back and forth, but then, you know, he just kept back to making Pack Rat, so I couldn't win. he's really good. You're right. All these decks have a lot of decisions. You're correct.
Yeah.
Let's what play his mono blue.
It looks like Tom Ross has played a pack rat. What a complex tree of decisions he'll have ahead of him next turn. Yeah. Especially if he draws his land.
And my opponent just, I was playing against Mono Blue Devotion, he just tapped all his mana every turn, and I died. Yeah.
But that's a good deck though. It was a good fight, you know. It's really close.
It definitely was. That's Magic is wonderful, isn't it? It's great. I love it.
Hashtag complex.
That's correct. Definitely
hashtag
true.
Adult.
Nice.
So those are the decks that I would play. And I'm playing in Portland, and I mean, we'll see what happens in Cleveland this weekend. But I think if I go, I'm probably just going to play Bant Heroic, unless, like, you know, there's a bunch of friggin' crackling dooms running around, which we're almost getting to that point now.
So it's interesting that I watched an exchange on Facebook with Brad, and he's like, well, I guess I'm going to go and crush Toronto with Mardu now.
Yeah, probably will.
I love that card, Crackling Doom. That's got to be, like, my favorite card of this block. It's so fucking good. Like, flavorfully, colorfully, tastefully, all the fullies.
I'm a very big fan of Crackling Doom.
It's such a fucking awesome magic card.
As I posted in that thread that you're talking about, Scott, I said, I think Crackling Doom is great. I think Mardu is not. I think that Crackling Doom is insane right now.
Yeah.
Against like all these Dragonlord Ojutais and Salamgars, and I mean, it's just an insane card. And I think all the cards in Mardu suck.
Yep. I would agree. Anytime I've lost to Mardu, it's because they played Crackling Doom and nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one opinion. The Mardu Dragons deck that that you guys saw on camera, second to last round, I think.
Yep.
Looked okay until his deck went and shit all over him. Couldn't draw a card.
Yeah, the concept is fine. I mean, if you're able to find a good home for Crackling Doom and like the rest of the cards line up right, I think your deck is probably pretty good, which is why Brad will probably do well at the tournament because, you know, he's good at all the things I just said.
Yeah.
So there's that. But I don't like. I think that Crackling Doom is great. Like, it might be like the best card in the format right now, given the context of the format. But you have to find obviously just the right home for it, and yeah, someone will do it. Not gonna be me. I don't have time to test. That'll probably do it.
Yeah.
Is it like just a matter of like even just splashing some what are those stupid things called, like Nomad's Outposts into just existing shells just to like splash it?
You could, because like you can cast it off of Caryatid and Nomad Outpost, or find like your lands off of Satyr Wayfinder or whatever. Like, that's certainly within the realm of possibility. And then your removal spells, then your removal spells are heroes, downfalls, and Crackling Dooms, and like that's insane.
Odd Murderous Cut for fun if you're going to be doing it that way too.
Yeah, I mean, I there is some way to go about doing it, because like there was the Sultai deck that made the top four that was splashing for Dragonlord Tarka, so you can just splash Crackling Doom in an Obzon deck probably pretty easily if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, you're obviously sacrificing, you know, some things. You know, if you play against a red deck, you're probably just dead as hell. But you know, that's life, I guess. Yeah. If you don't think you're going to play against red, but I think that someone is. It might be for Toronto. I don't know if it'll be this weekend in Cleveland or it'll be in Toronto. Someone's going to find like the Crackling Doom deck to play for the weekend, and they're going to have a good weekend because Crackling Doom is way too good right now not to be played.
Yeah. So that being said, the other style of deck, I kind of been envisioning the format. It's sort of positioned as the Esper Dragons deck, and then you've got, you know, Obzon, whether you're looking at like mid, like the control or the aggro, obviously more slanted towards aggro. Mono red is always going to be mono red, but also you've got the Raptor Den Protector decks.
Yes, you do.
Now, what is your two cents on that as an engine? I mean, every time I saw sort of Den Protector and Raptor going, obviously I was very invested in whatever Larry was doing, since, you know, he's one of my team boys.
The Swayze Chef,
yeah. He's one of my proud card-carrying banner members of Team Geist, of course, right? So I was always loved watching what he was doing, and of course Willie was watching right along as well. And every time he flips over a Den Protector and gets back like two creatures plus a card, it just seems backbreaking.
Den Protector is awesome. It's really funny. I just didn't understand how. I don't want to come off as like arrogant or something. It's just like I didn't understand how people weren't just like, this card's insane, because like obviously it's not Eternal Witness, but they're not going to print Eternal Witness again.
Yeah,
at least I don't think so. So it's like, yeah, this is basically Eternal Witness, and the Obzon decks are super slow. It would be very surprising if this card is not good. My initial thought. All the text on the card is good. And it would be very surprising if it's not good. And then, like, Deathmist Raptor, it would be surprising if that card's not good, too, given the text. Together, they're obviously pretty good. And, excuse me, I don't know if they're going to form mid-range decks for the next X months. There's a lot of options, but it sure seems that way. Or at least, like, in some number that they don't have to be four ofs.
Yeah.
But the engine is good. And I think we're just going to see Den Protector as like a one or a two of in green decks for a while. And you might see the same thing for Deathmist Raptor. But I mean, that engine is going to be around for a long time, because this is going to be around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the NFNs is messing with that, obviously, from the Abzan aggro side is very interesting. And not to be understated. But again, one of the reasons why I think Abzan Aggro is probably one of the better decks to be heading into Toronto with. That's, like I said, it's on my radical shortlist. So
nice. I think that deck is really good. So I think that choosing that is perfectly fine. It also, like, if you're considering like Abzan Midrange or Abzan Control or something like that, time is like a real factor.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree. I've given up on like the decks that are going to take me to time more often than not. You know, I just want to get my opponents dead and move on. There's so many important things to do in between rounds. It doesn't include finding your seed immediately for the next one.
Yeah, this is true.
So
this is true.
I like to be able to go to the bathroom or stand in a line for a water bottle. Those are my two favorite things to do.
Man, playing Esper, that was the worst, where I was just like, every round, I was just like, I have to fucking piss so bad. Oh, round three starting, okay. Oh, I have to piss again. Oh, round four, okay.
So, I've got a very exciting week coming up.
Okay.
Tomorrow night, I am going to be hosting Willie Edel on my stream. So we will be going through his Pro Tour deck or whatever revisions he's made thereof and going through that. So that's really exciting.
Do you play music on your stream still?
Not when I have guests that are that important.
Oh, so no Big Wheelie style?
No Big Wheelie style.
Ooh, that's too bad.
I may lead in with that, though. That's a really
good idea. Maybe just like do that as like the pre-show song.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Just okay. A touch. Just a little kiss.
All right. And then also, I just confirmed as of 36 minutes ago, I will be joined on Thursday by the Boz himself.
Oh, AB. Very
yeah.
Nice.
So that's really interesting as well. I know that he streamed a little bit himself in the past, and of course, being a good dude from the Sugarloaf area, I hope that some words from the Duke went a long way to making that happen. So that's great. But I'm really, really looking forward to it. That's going to be sweet. So we'll go through his version of Abzan Aggro as well, and we'll lock into the testing before for the weeks leading up. Plus, it's my fucking birthday on Sunday, so how sick is that?
Birthday.
Yeah. So, good week for Scotty. I'm pretty excited. And, I mean, I got to start it off by, like, seeing you guys, and, of course, KYT's back. I haven't talked to him for 2 weeks. And fucking Cedric's here! Just, like, it's all coming up in Calum. That's all I gotta say.
Boom.
Boom.
Boom, baby.
So.
There it is.
Yeah.
It's been great having KYT back. All of his input has been fantastic.
It's par for the course, sir.
That's all I'm saying. I'm just, it's good to have him back. It was nice to hear his voice once.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Cedric, do you have anything else that you want to like add in here? I mean, I guess we're getting close to winding down. Does KYT wants to tell us about his vacation at some point over and above? I sat around with my thumb up my ass listening to people talk Cambodian.
Talk shit about me.
I did for me, because I'm going to get out of here after this.
Yeah.
I have to edit some more articles this evening. Let's see. Cleveland this coming weekend for the Open Series. Portland after that. Let's see. Twitter at Cedric A. Phillips. Facebook, you can find me. Said Talks podcast on SoundCloud, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Star City Games. I do most of the episodes with Patrick Sullivan, but I've got some interview ones coming up well soon. Adrian Sullivan after his Pro Tour top four.
Sweet. Well, that's awesome.
So that should be a lot of fun and some other stuff. So keep your eyes out for that if you like podcasts. And that's it. I'm just a passionate dude about Magic. Hopefully I don't offend anybody, but I typically do. So, and I'm going to go to Chipotle now for dinner, and then I'm going to finish editing articles, and then going to watch at least one episode of Daredevil, hopefully two.
Oh God, that show's insane. I finished it last week. It's so good.
Oh geez, I just had the first episode done. That's all I've watched is episode one with the wife. All
right, episode two, you're going to get stone hooked.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I'm already stone hooked. My wife is like really like scared of episode two because she hates anything involving children.
Okay. Well, so, no spoilers because I'm not. Yeah. I don't do that. But yeah. I think after episode two, you get locked in because that's what happened to me. Like, that, like, that's just, I don't know. It was just like, you know, everyone talked about it. And normally when everyone talks about like a show, I never watch it, but Daredevil's a Marvel thing and I'm a comic book guy.
Mm.
So I just like turned it on and I, like, thought the first episode was obviously good. And then the second episode, just, that's it. It's the nuts.
I think my favorite part was Henson playing Foggy.
Yeah, I agree. He's really good too.
Right off the get-go, once that started happening, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to like this. Because it's always who they find to be like that secondary character that really does a big thing for him. You know, also with like the crazy kicking and punching and stuff, that was pretty cool too.
Yeah.
So you know why you like Daredevil? Because you like Foggy.
Yeah.
You like the person.
Yeah.
Emotional attachment. Boom.
I see what you did there.
We call bringing that shit full circle, baby.
Yeah, I was waiting for an advertisement on boots.
That's what you needed?
I needed them to sell me boots and being blind.
It's a quick ad. That's all. We can see what we can do for you. Get you a mask like Daredevil has.
Exactly.
You should be one of those.
Nice.
But yeah, I think that's it for me, gents. Obviously appreciate being on as always. It's always a blast to do.
Hey, before you go, do you have a scumbag story? It doesn't have to be magic related, but like we have to ask. It's just kind of part of the deal. Did a waitress short you some change? Did like, come on, give us anything.
Did your trainer make you want to punch his face in lately?
My trainer is actually pretty awesome, so that doesn't happen.
I'm sure an airline has messed with you.
No, actually, not, airline has. I can tell you, I actually have a scumbag story.
Oh, good, excellent.
I tweeted this. So, have you all been on airplanes?
I've been on an airplane.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. I find it unlikely that you guys fly as much as I do. But
correct.
When you're on an airplane, you're in a pressurized cabin, and I think there's always like this thing when you're in a pressurized cabin, and like you have to fart, like, and it's like, hey, if I fart on this airplane, what's going to happen? Like, is it going to smell bad? Are they going to hear it? Will I be embarrassed? But the plane is like so loud and everyone's kind of doing their own thing. It's just like, hey, I'm just going to gun it and go for it. So like, I don't know. I imagine most people just fart on an airplane because who gives a shit? Well, the guy next to me on my flight home today was just teeing off with the farts. And so for a long time, I was always like, I wonder if farts smell on an airplane because like there's a pressurized cabin, you know, like that might just not be a thing. I don't know. That's how my brain works. Like maybe this just isn't a thing. So I've, you know, farted on airplanes and they just have never smelled bad. And this guy was just letting it go and they smelled terrible. And I was just in the hard lock because I was next to the window. So there was nothing I could do. I was just in the pressurized cabin farting hard lock from the guy next to me. So this is my scumbag story of like this guy just for 2 hours is just going to town and like every 10 minutes I have to be like, oh God, that's horrible. But like I'm not going to say anything because like I don't want to accuse someone wrongly, even though it's, also I don't know how the hell you have that conversation on a plane of like, hey, could you not fart a bunch, dude, you know? So
that's, I think that's like a really simple like, hey, looks like the bathrooms are free right now, and just kind of leave it like that. He's like, do you want to get up? And it's like, no, I'm good.
Are you like, so that's my scumbag story of this particular podcast, where that guy was just teeing off next to me, just completely enabled, didn't give a shit, just farting like crazy. And there's just nothing I can do besides just take it.
Wow.
But you couldn't hear them, right?
Could not hear them.
No.
No?
Could definitely smell them.
Could you taste them? Were they that bad?
It wasn't that bad. It was definitely just like, you know, the first one I was like, that's just like, that's a weird smell. Like, okay. Maybe I'm just like thinking things. I don't know. Like the second or the third one happened, I'm just like, okay, someone's just definitely farting and not caring. Which, I mean, been there. Whatever. And then like it just kept happening like every like 5 or 10 minutes, and I'm just like, wow, just unbelievable.
It's like, hey, these air biscuits you keep sending my way are really tasty.
there's just nothing I can even like say or do. It's just like, yep, this is just the thing that's happening on my 4-hour flight home. I can't
you
be thinking about.
You should have pressed
can
the
I
call.
Pass out?
You should have pressed the call button, like the one for fucking the stewardess, and just like said, like, yeah, he like really smells like fart over here. So maybe
at the same time, much like your commander deck, those were made just for you.
So I made the like in situations like this and like that. I posted on Twitter because I think it's just really funny. And just, that's just life sometimes. Just some dude's just farting next to you and doesn't give a shit. And it's just making your life bad on a plane and you can't do anything about it. So there you go. That's my scumbag story.
Or like, hey, do you mind switching seats with me, guy behind me? What?
Yeah.
Oh, he's farting quite a bit and I'm in the hard lock in the window. And I wondered if maybe you, like, just pay it forward, like random act of kindness, like a movie, you know? Maybe you could. No, you don't want. Okay, thanks.
Okay. I'm like 2 hours in the flight. It's just like, hey, anybody want to switch? Anyone want to switch?
Anybody want
switches?
To
switches? Switches? Anyone want to?
I'm a famous person. I mean, no, this is a story. You could. Oh no. Okay.
No. No one wants my seat. Okay. All right. I guess I'm just gonna sit here and just take this for another 2 hours.
Breathe and my mouth open.
Yeah, and so I did. For 2 more hours, just the hardest of locks.
Oh my god.
So that is my scumbag story, and with that, gentlemen, I'm going to depart as I have to go get dinner. Thank you very much for having me as usual, and I would love to do this again sometime.
You know you're always welcome, buddy.
All right, fellas, have fun with the rest of your podcast. KYT, I'm glad your travels went well.
Thank you.
Thank you for talking. And I will see you guys later.
All right, peace out, buddy.
See you later.
So, KYT, how'd you do? How'd it go? What's new?
I went 0-2 drop. I'm actually a... gonna talk a bit about Magic quickly because I was like reading through a lot. I haven't even read, like, this is the first time I read Den Protector, like Deathmist Raptor. I haven't been paying attention at all. The only thing the only person I was really in touch with when it came to Magic competitive wise was my partner for my Pro Tour, Jay Lansdow, who worked with, I think it was Team Wizards Tower with Dan Lantier and Pascal Maynard. I think the bulk of them did well in terms of most of them making day two, but none of them, I believe, hit like top 50 or anything. So talking to Jay right now, and it's interesting to see him tell me that he thinks Bat Heroic, like, was his deck that allowed him to make run off a lot of wins to make day two. I think his draft didn't go too well, so he needed Bat Heroic to do really well for him. But he feels that it's probably poorly positioned moving forward if Esper Dragons goes up and people are adapting Foul Tongue Invocations in their deck, which, you know, Alex has two of in the main and one in the sideboard. So he says that card's a beating. And if that's the case, I don't see Bat Heroic being a good choice, at least in the coming week, if people are going to net deck the GP Krakow. So, but for me, I'm going to start with the best deck, because even Alex and PV, a lot of the top name pros are saying this is by far the best deck, and I haven't heard this line in a while. So I asked him, like, is this like the mono black devotion of the format? And he thinks it's even better than that. So
really,
I'm gonna give it a go.
Which deck, sorry?
Esper Dragons.
Esper Dragons.
Oh, really?
Right.
It's
really
obscene. I played it for Games Day this weekend, and as much as I literally did the stupidest thing possible, but I'll let KYT continue. But yeah, it's very good. Sorry. I was like totally going to steal your thunder, and I'm like, wait a second. This is like that rare moment where KYT's actually talking. What the fuck are you doing? Shut up, Jeremy.
So it might be this, one of those things again where like I have the opportunity to play the best deck and I might as well do it, seeing as how it was the third most popular deck at Krakow, like Scotty mentioned in the day two metagame breakdown, and might not be number one in Toronto. Might still be in the second to third range. So if I'm playing against another deck most of the time, then I'm pretty good. Jay did mention, Lansdale did mention their team testing Risen Executioner as a potential mirror tech, but I've also heard how that card is not impactful enough to be worthy of slots. So, but that's interesting that they looked at that to be able to sort of break the mirror. And I expect maybe more mirror tech to come out when OGP Toronto comes around. So I'm excited to start playing for the first time in a long time, like nice. Casting my first anticipate and casting my first Silumgar's Scorn. So that's exciting for me. Jared, did you want to talk about your stupid thing before I just
about
my vacation?
So I wanted to try and build Shota's deck, and my cards are still not organized anywhere where they need to be. So I spent about 2 hours trying to put together the deck, and then immediately just called my buddy and said, okay, I want to go to games day. Are you going? He's like, yeah. I'm like, do you have a deck for me? He's like, yeah, I've got two decks. I'm like, okay, I show up. So he's got like this brew, and he's got the Esper Dragons list. And he's like, what do you want to play? Do you want to play the blue brew, or do you want to play the Esper list? And I'm like, you know what? I think I'd really like to try the Esper list if you're like kind of doing the brew thing. And he sat there and said, okay, I'll do the brew. You try the Esper deck. So I pick it up, and it's like the Channel Fireball. It's the PV list, whatever the case may be, the Hain list, pretty much to the T. I end up playing like a game one against the guy who's playing like a red, black, white Warriors deck with Goblin Rabble Master, and I get stuck on three land and die to a Rabble Master. So that can happen. And then game two, it's just kind of pretty much the exact same thing where he's just like Rabble Mastering, Rabble Mastering, Rabble Mastering. He had like three Rabble Masters, and then he had two of like the Rakdos thing that brings back your two drop and keeps hounding you with the stupid thing. And it was just really ugly. He ended up beating me. So I was kind of like, okay, this sucks right off the get-go. But the next match I ended up playing against like kind of a real deck. It was like a green-white with the green-white devotion type deck with the Raptors and the two-mana enchantment that pay for and you manifest something, you do all kinds of crazy stuff. And that deck I was just doing all kinds of obscene things with, because when you cast Ojutai and then you hit a guy, the game becomes extremely unfair. So I end up playing, winning that match. Then the next one I end up winning, and I'm in a pretty good spot, and we're playing four rounds and it's a top eight. So I end up going into this match, and I'm playing against the Sidisi type of reanimator deck. And game one goes my way, and it's great. Game two, we're playing, and it's this long, drawn-out match. I just can't seem to get the win on him. He's got me kind of on the back foot, but I'm in a position where it's like I might be able to draw it out, and I get to this like odd spot where it's like, okay, I can kind of do like this play where I put a threat onto the board, and I have a chance to kind of like really draw it up, or I can like try and slow it down and do a couple things to buy me a few more turns. So I end up trying to do the thing where I actually put a threat on the board, and he's just got like this sequence of cards to kill me off. And the game ends literally as time's called. So we end up having a draw. So I'm looking at him like, okay, we're 2-1-1. It's a 4-person tournament. I was hearing someone talking about the pairings in the background, and I look at him like, hey man, do you want to concede to me? Because I don't think with a draw, either of us will get in. And he kind of goes, well, no, I don't think that like either of us was going to be a clear-cut winner in this one, so I don't want to concede to you. And I look at him, and I'm like, well, if that's the case, no point in both of us missing. I concede to you. So I sit there, and I get up, and I start taking apart all my stuff and giving the deck back to Buddy. And then the top eight pairings go up, and he's doing good type thing like that. So I sit there, and I'm like, oh, you know, like, let's go take a look at things. Can I see the pairings? And the judge is like, oh, no, you don't need to see the pairings, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, well, no, I do actually want to see the pairings. And he's like, oh, no, there's not another round. I'm like, well, no, I just want to see where I landed. Like, I just want to see the pairings, or not the pairings. I want to see the standings. That's all I want to see. So he shows me the standings, and I realize that if we had both just taken a draw, we both would have been in the top eight.
Brutal.
Yeah. So I literally conceded myself out of the top eight of that tournament and out of getting one of those awesome dragon foils. So yeah, it was just kind of like one of those spots where it's like, yeah, if I literally had just got up and walked away, I would have been in the top eight. But no, I tried to do the right thing and I end up scumming myself out of the tournament.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty funny. The guy actually was like super awesome. Like he came up to me and he's like, man, I want you to have the foil because you let me into the tournament. And I sat there and I said, I can't take that. I can't take that. That foil's awesome. It's pretty much the only reason to play this tournament. I'm not a playmat guy. Like, if you're playing for the playmat, that's awesome for you. But like, honestly, a lot of people came here to play for that foil. I can't take it away from you. Honestly, if you had just not spoken English at all and didn't know what I was doing, you would have gotten it anyways. Like, the only way you didn't get that foil is if you had taken my question, if you would answer my question yes to conceding to me.
Yeah.
So, and it was one of those, like, awkward spots where it's like, I can't see the standings. I didn't know what things look like. The only thing that I had going for me was that my, like, my buddy Mike, the guy who's, like, the TO of the place, he was taking the day off and he was playing in the tournament while, like, other staff were running it. He was talking about how, like, oh, I don't think that there's going to be too many people getting in. I must have misheard him or something like that. But, yeah, I literally conceded myself out of the top eight of that tournament. So, would play the deck again, would probably not concede myself out of the top eight.
That's good.
That just didn't feel like it had the proper value.
No. That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't end up playing game day this weekend.
No.
No, I did not. My GPT was last weekend. Weekend before? Yeah, weekend before. Yeah, it was bad. So I'm just gearing up for Toronto. Just been playing a lot. Trying to make sure I can play the right deck. We'll see. KYT, go ahead. Wrap it up, buddy.
Okay, so it was interesting just to travel. Like, I've been around the world, I haven't been in Europe, but I've been to Hong Kong, I've been to Hawaii, I've been to Vegas, I've been to different places in the world, but I've never felt like I needed to be really cognizant of getting things potentially stolen from me. So, like, in Canada, we're just like, I just walk around, whatever, but in Cambodia, I'm told by, I was with my girlfriend's parents, and they're really like getting at me that, you know, I need to have my bag in front of me and not like to my side, so to make sure that things didn't get stolen. So that experience was interesting to me, going to one of the poorer countries, having to be more aware of that. One of my girlfriend's cousins, basically on his sort of one of his trips in Cambodia, from Cambodia to Kuala Lumpur, had his iPhone 6 stolen getting off a bus. So that was one of the more memorable things to me. Just always having to be careful. Can't just be like admiring the sights and the scenery. So I was in Cambodia. So the trip was Cambodia. Then from Cambodia, I went to Bali for 5 days. And then from Bali to Vietnam, and then took a bus from Vietnam back to Cambodia and Cambodia back home. I spent a bulk of my time in Bali, Indonesia. And for me, it blew my mind just how the prices of things were, especially since I've taken cabs in the U.S. and in Montreal and Toronto. I've easily paid, the most I paid for a cab was probably $50 even. And here in Bali, you can pay someone $50 to $70 and they're your driver for the whole day.
Wow.
And that concept was alien to me. Just like, they drop you off at some like temple or whatever that you can walk around for an hour, and they're just like outside waiting for you until you're done. And then you go back on. And then you go to the next thing. We went hiking. It took us like 2 hours plus. And like, the driver's right there, ready to drive you to your next location when you're done. So it just really felt like I was getting, I guess, pampered is the word. Like, that I was getting like brought everywhere. So, and the food was much cheaper than it is here. So it just felt like the ideal vacation place, and I definitely will go back again. Like Hawaii was really nice in terms of the beach, everything. But when it comes to bang for your buck, I mean, this place is it. Except obviously the plane ticket costs infinite compared to other places like Vegas. But that's one thing that I will do again. And the people there in Indonesia, they're just insanely friendly. Like these hotel resorts, they're just people that will, like, you feel like will do anything for you, and with a giant smile, which is something that I've never felt anywhere else, except for maybe Hawaii. So very awesome experience. I would recommend anyone from going there. In fact, I hyped it so much to my sister that's like on the number one list for my sister to go visit next. So that's where I would go. Other than that, back to the whole family thing, it was really tough for me. I couldn't, you know, I'm trying to impress like people from my girlfriend's side, but it wasn't like, it couldn't work. It didn't work. They just didn't understand anything, even English. So it was really tough. Now, like I said, at the beginning of the show, I feel for all these white guys or non-Asians dating Asians and meeting the parents for the first time. And if their parents don't speak English at all, it's just this really awkward, thing where I'm trying to be polite and I'm trying to let them know that, you know, I want to interact with them, but I just don't know how. So that was the toughest part and something that that I was thinking about every day I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, now you know what it's like for the rest of us. Welcome to fucking welcome to humanity. Check your Asian privilege at the door.
it was just weird. I'm just like, wow, I just don't know anything. And then when, you know, you have these family gatherings, everyone's talking to each other and you're just, I'm just standing there like an idiot, like a fucking idiot. And the and my girlfriend doesn't even speak Cambodian. So that was like, she couldn't even translate for me. So
wow.
It was very awkward. And I don't recommend that to anyone, but it's not like you get to choose to be put in that scenario.
True that.
And so that was the main thing. I got to see a lot of sites, but just learning the different cultures was very interesting. And I can't wait to be able to go back again. Whether I'd go back to Cambodia or Vietnam, that's another question, but I'm definitely going back to Bali because that was like heaven to me. So can't wait, but now it's back to the magic grindstone.
Yeah.
And seeing Dad in 2 weeks.
I'm excited. We're going to have some fun. We are going to have some fun. Yeah, so I guess that's a good episode. That's a wrap, right?
I think so.
Sweet.
Yep.
Well, tune in next week where you will hear from us right before the GP Toronto, and maybe we'll talk about what decks we're playing and what our tower testing has gone. And so tune in and check it out. In the meantime, leave some comments. We love you all. That's amazing. And check out my stream this week. It's going to be some sweet, sweet shit. All right. Well, with that, A-Team, episode 225, fucking out.
I love you all.
Later, guys.
Okay.